second day of 2019. What a great way to start off the year. Last night we had some great friends in studio. Paul Farvar, Todd Belcourt, Ken Garr. And tonight I got to see Andrea Darlis. David Jennings is here again, because Cassara Henning in the producer's booth, and Dr. John Duffy in studio with us. Hey, Doc.
It's so good to be here, Patty.
It is really good to see you.
Good to see you.
I messaged you pretty late tonight, and I thought, you know, maybe do a phoner. So thank you for being so gracious with your time and driving down.
I'm thrilled to be here.
Thank you. I know that you and Paul have been co-hosting, so I hope that Paul doesn't feel slighted. But I also, by the way, I told him he could swing by if he was feeling lonely without you.
Oh, good. Yeah. I'm glad, because I don't want him to feel bad either.
No. Well, we had a conversation again about relationships. He does fascinate me, and I know he does for you as well. For those of you who don't know, one of our hosts from the Nightside, Paul Farvar, hosts a podcast as well called Singles Only.
Right.
And he just, it's not that he revels in being single. It's just that he doesn't understand how anybody else would want to be married.
He seems very committed to the idea of being single, right?
Yes.
And yes, he does not. Marriage is a puzzle to Paul.
Right.
Yeah. And I enjoy the hell out of that.
And no matter how much we try to convince him, no, there are unicorns out there, I guess, is what we seem like to him.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The other thing that I asked him about, and then one of the reasons I wanted to invite you tonight, was about a little bit about the holidays. I asked our single friends last night, and maybe Cassara. I think, Cassara, were you the one telling me about cuffing season during the holidays?
Yes, that was me.
That was you, and I had never heard of it. Now I hear it all over the place. Doc, are you familiar with cuffing season?
When you co-host with Paul Farvar, you,
you learn all the terms.
Right? You learn about cuffing season very quickly, and I've heard about it from a few clients as well.
We won't go into any specifics about your clients, but I think that the holidays are such a stressful time to be in a new relationship, or to be at the point where you think you might be done with the relationship, and that's the tipping point.
Yeah.
You're like, do I really want to shop for this person?
Exactly. Any relationship in flux is difficult around the holidays, because you just don't know what to do. Do I want to shop? Do I have them over with my family?
Right.
There's all sorts of questions that linger.
I didn't even think about the family part.
Yeah.
That's so much drama. Cassara, have you been in this situation? Did you cuff?
I did not.
You did not cuff? Were you trying to cuff?
No, not at all.
Did you, you had a party, though, encouraging others to cuff.
I did have a party encouraging others to cuff.
She did.
No kidding.
Yes.
How did it
go?
It was great. We definitely sold the place out. It went way past capacity, and I've been asked to now host two of those events for next month because of Valentine's Day.
Oh my
gosh. How about
gosh.
That?
Yeah. That is so smart.
Thank you.
I love it, because that's what I think a lot of people want, is to have an environment where it's going to be fun. Maybe you find somebody, but there is that overlying theme of find somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do. I like that, because everyone's doing all these apps and everything, which again, to you and me, it is foreign.
Absolutely, completely foreign. I cannot imagine.
It's foreign to those that use it, too. It's not just you guys. It's foreign to everyone. No one really understands it.
Well, but we don't understand it in the sense that it's not, because I think it's going to be wired into the psyche of our kids, your generation, of how you determine a relationship. Like, how you even feel about yourself is reflected in how you feel, how you do on social media.
Right.
You know,
how many followers you have, how many likes you get on your pictures.
Yeah. It changes your brain chemistry, doesn't it, Doc?
Absolutely. Completely. It creates something I call identity traffic, where you have like your identity that's offline, your identity that's online, and you've got to create this separate persona, right? And it's got to be a pretty engaging, intriguing persona in order to either cuff or connect with somebody outside of regular life, right?
I mean,
it's really tricky stuff.
It's very tricky.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, and that's one of the reasons I wonder if like a phenomenon, we were talking about Bird Box, right?
Right.
I wonder if that's one of the reasons why the phenomenon is so strong, is that people want something to talk about with each other, a way to connect, even if it's on social media or personally. Like, was it just last year that a Making of a Murderer was so huge too?
Yes.
People
was
wanted,
that last year?
Was it last year
maybe
or 2 years ago?
Maybe the year before.
Wow,
at
last
the long
year was so long.
It's maybe it was 2 years ago, right? Because they already had a sequel.
Yeah, I think it was 2017.
Sequel just came out, right?
Yeah, the sequel was in 2018. So yeah. I think the first one was 2017.
I think that that's why so many, because we don't really have a touchstone as much. Like, some people might love Game of Thrones, you know,
right.
But for some reason, and not everybody has Bird Box either, but 45 million people watching it is huge.
Right.
It's massive. Yeah,
it is. Yeah. But people want to connect on something. Now, please, as Netflix has urged everyone, please do not do. Listen to this tweet from Netflix. Can't believe I have to say this. This is Netflix US. That's a Twitter. But please do not hurt yourselves with this Bird Box challenge. We don't know how this started, and we appreciate the love. But boy and girl have just one wish for 2019 is that you do not end up in the hospital due to memes.
Wow. I didn't even know that it was a challenge. I saw nothing about a Bird Box challenge at all. Where have I been?
I don't know, but there are videos of people trying to do it, and there's like a girl at the top of her stairs. There's a guy driving with blindfolded. You kick people. Come on.
Wow. All come right. on.
No. Okay.
Well, it's no worse than there was one about a song, "How Much You Love Me," and they get out of the car. And they're walking, they're dancing along beside the moving car.
Yes.
What which are you talking
which,
about?
As you might expect, doesn't always end well. People, you know, it's like facing asphalt.
This is crazy. Look, there's a family.
And it's global, which is truly frightening.
Yes. And here's one with it looks like a guy with his kid, like a toddler in the kitchen. I don't know if I can play the video, but no, people don't. And then don't involve your kids.
No. And the whole family's got the blindfolds on. It's really inappropriate and going to break bad.
This one's okay. This looks scary, but she's actually, so there was on Good Morning America, one of the hosts or one of the guests tried to put lipstick on blindfolded. That's okay.
See, now that's funny.
That's funny.
That's pretty good.
That's harmless. If you try to eat spoons, no forks, no knives. But
no driving.
No driving.
To David's
driving.
Point.
No driving.
Nothing with wheels involved.
Right. No, I mean, like, the stupidest thing we ever did in a car was one of those fire drills. Did you ever, like, a stoplight?
Oh, we did the fire drill. It's always fun to do the fire drill.
The fire drill.
Yeah.
Is that where you get a stoplight and then you all get out and switch seats?
Everybody switches, right.
Gotcha. I've never done it, but I've heard about it.
I don't know if you switch seats. We just ran around the car and got back to your regular seat. It's almost, it looks like musical chairs, but while you're driving, it looks it's stupid. It's stupid.
Are you proud of what you've done?
No, I'm really not.
It might be a guy thing, but we always love that.
I
love the fire drill. And we always switched who the driver was, who was in the back left, who was in the back right.
See, Dr. Duffy's proud of what he did.
I'm not unproud. I'll say it that way.
You know what? Let's talk about this. Actually, this is perfect. Let's talk about teenage psychology and the risks we take as teenagers. Because I will tell you, I'm not proud. The reason I'm not proud is because of the chances I took, not just with my life, but the lives of the people in my car and around me. Because when I was 16, you feel like you're immortal. More when we come back. 312-981-7200. If you want to join the conversation, we'd love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. More in a moment. 720 WGN. Were you reckless as a teenager? Do you have any regrets, or are you pretty proud of what you accomplished in your younger years? 312-981-7200. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. Joining me is Dr. John Duffy. He has his own podcast here on WGN Radio.
I do.
Hold on. Let's make sure people can hear you. Otherwise.
Yes. My wife and I have a podcast called Better. And that's here on WGN Radio and on iTunes.
And you just launched one. You just dropped one today, I believe.
We did.
Yes.
We did.
Better. Yes. You can find him on Twitter and on Facebook and on WGNplus.com as well. And he has so many great insights into relationships and teenagers in particular is an area that you work with your patients.
Correct.
And let me ask you this first. When it comes to the idea of immortality, like, when does that change? Because I think that teenagers just think that they're immortal. They can, even my son, he just flings himself around.
Yeah.
Like, there's, and partly because he doesn't necessarily get hurt, you know, and he rebounds pretty well. And I watch him, like, just, and I remember when he was even younger, you hear like this dunk, 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 dunk. And I'd hear, I'm okay.
Right.
Right. Oh, my God. You know, climbing trees and stuff like that.
Oh,
When does that sort of dissolve?
It usually dissolves, sometime in the late teens, early 20s, when you suffer your first major loss, in my experience. That's what it's usually when you see that somebody you're reasonably close to has passed away.
Okay.
And every once in a while, I'll work with a young person who has somebody their age, you know, from cancer, from an accident,
right.
From suicide, pass away. And then suddenly they become very cautious and aware of their mortality.
Well, until that happens, there are teenagers. And, well, look, we know that there are adults who feed on adrenaline. I saw a few on the Kennedy on my way here. I mean, just weaving all the way through traffic. But when I was in high school, I went to Lane Tech. I played softball. So I would load up whenever we had an away game, I would load up everyone in my car. And I sometimes had when I had the Toyota Corolla wagon, it wasn't too bad. It was a little bit bigger. So, but still, you know, no seatbelts in the back, people sort of flopping around.
Oh yeah.
And you know, in the back seat, no seatbelts. I would have at least, sometimes we'd have 3 to 4 because it was girls and they were smaller. So you'd have 6, maybe up to 8 people in my little Toyota Corolla, which is so dang. I mean, I took all those lives.
Yeah.
In my own, I mean, it's, I shudder at how dangerous it was and how lucky everybody turned out to be.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think we were all reckless in that way. Now when you're 16, you can only legally have one other person in the car, but we had,
thank God.
Yeah. But my buddy Al had a Delta 88, which I think we could fit 10 people in that.
Okay.
Fairly comfortably.
Yeah, yeah.
And we routinely would.
Yeah. And we didn't think about it. I just remember I was 17 and we were playing a game. I think we were like somewhere along Lakeshore Drive. There's a couple baseball diamonds on the north end. And we were coming under a viaduct and I slammed on the brakes and another car almost hit us from behind and the girls in the hatch screamed. And that was the last time I ever did that. So a close call, I hope, you know, brings people to their senses.
Yeah. Yeah.
But is there any way for us to, you know, talk to our kids about that just short of, you know, the really drastic, dire, sad stories to encourage them to be more responsible? You mentioned the laws, but
yeah, but the laws tend not to work, honestly. Not to indict anybody, but I know a lot of 16-year-olds for a guy my age, and I don't think I've met one, even law-abiding kids, who have stuck to that law, who have stuck to that rule.
Right.
So most everybody has violated that. What it usually takes is either a close call like what you had or hearing about something that has happened.
Okay.
So it usually takes something tragic. This isn't that funny conversation, but it's just true. Like talking to them usually is like Charlie Brown's mom. Exactly.
Doc?
Yes, sir.
How about this as an analogy? Someone told me when I was first starting out, you know, you're a good guy, but there are some things you're not going to learn until you get fired for the first time. Is that a fair enough analogy?
I like that analogy a lot. That seems to fit here perfectly.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
You get a little bit of a scare in you.
Yeah, a little scare helps.
Well, now we're talking about, as far as, you know, being in the cars and that kind of recklessness, obviously lives are at stake. Now, the 708, there's other kinds of recklessness and taking chances. I'll pull up the text screen for you when we come back after the news. But 708 says, I spent a night in Barrington Jail, which was very nice. I don't know if they're being sarcastic. At the age of 20, I don't know, maybe they have a comparison.
Barrington might be a nice jail.
It might be.
Know.
I don't know. I know my dad spent some time at 26 in California, but I don't think he ever, I don't think there was any Yelp ratings for it. But at age 20 for skinny dipping in an apartment pool, I'm uber responsible. So this is a feather in my cap of having gone skinny dipping. Nice.
Nice win there.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not saying I never did that kind of, I never spent time in jail ever. Doctor, you hesitated a little bit.
Yes, Kassara, I'm hesitating.
We're both looking at you like,
Kassara and I have both done time. Hard time.
She's with me with the angel ring around our heads.
There's one more of us who also has spent a night in jail.
I wonder what the numbers are with men, between men and women, when they've had to spend time at, like, you know, whether it's for... Now, do you want to tell us?
I'll tell my story because it's absolutely pathetic. I am a teetotaler to this day. This is another thing that confuses Paul Farvar.
You don't drink?
I never have.
Oh.
And yet, when I was 20 years, 11 months, and 10 days old, so I'm nearly 21, a buddy of mine got me a fake ID for the 20 days.
Okay.
And we went to a bar on Rush Street, and the bar was raided by the police, and 20 minutes later, I was in the paddy wagon, handcuffed behind my back. The real deal.
So you never drank?
Never drank.
Didn't even get to the bar.
Didn't even get...
Got arrested.
Never even made it up to the bar, out of the bar, and handcuffed, and in a holding cell for a good 2 hours of my life.
Do you think that you would... Had that not happened, you would have been a different person? Like that?
No, it wasn't really life-changing. It's a feather in my cap.
It's a feather in your cap?
It's a story I love to tell.
That you... Okay. I mean, I guess I was lucky because at the University of Illinois, you could have anybody's student ID because you only had to be 18 or over. I started at 7.
All right.
But I didn't drink a lot. I mean, I liked hanging out with my friends at like O'Malley's and C.O. Daniels. Oh, God, what a meat market. But they may as well, because Sarah, I don't know if you're familiar, but C.O. Daniels and Cam's are these bars that are right next to each other in Urbana and Champaign.
Not familiar at all.
And you may as well just have been swinging around on a hook if you were a girl so guys could just like slap your body parts around. Because guys would like have tallies of how many body parts they touched squeezing through the bar. Like, you know, I touched a boob, I touched a butt, you know.
They took a tally of this?
Yeah, they would. And there were articles by guys anonymously about like doing the rainbow, you know, women of different ethnicities and hair color and things like that. And terrible jokes. But yeah,
times have changed.
That's another thing. I don't have they.
Yeah, times have definitely changed.
Okay, I hope so. But I think that the problem there, though, is the idea of binge drinking on college campuses, too. That's something that seems to be not just prevalent, but encouraged in some ways.
Oh, yeah. It
absolutely.
Is.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right? It is absolutely wildly epidemic beyond what I think we read about. You know, even when there is an article in The Atlantic, which there was a couple of years ago, that highlighted what binge drinking is like. My son just graduated from college, and so I've spent some time on campuses. I work with a lot of college-age kids, and binge drinking on campuses is reckless and dangerous and leads to like late night problems that are kind of immeasurably difficult to tease out on the back end.
Exactly. Yeah. You make choices you wouldn't otherwise. I mean, there's one idea of being, you know, sort of taking chances when you're younger. The 708 says, oh, I encourage the scary story. My niece's best friend was killed by a drunk driver. My kids do not drink and drive. Oh, so telling the scary stories.
I think telling the scary stories work. If you're involved in the scary story, sometimes that's even more effective. But parents are sometimes reluctant to tell their own. But I always tell parents, go for that.
And
tell that story.
Tell the story. And I'm trying to think if I have. See, I was only 8 when a girl in the neighborhood was hit by a car. So I almost wonder if that is a different effect, because then it's just like, well, it's hard to explain. I couldn't go to school for a while because I went to the funeral and didn't understand what was happening and was like, well, if that could happen to her, like what?
Oh, wow.
It was very, and I didn't understand what was happening. I touched her arm and because I just couldn't. I was like, is she real? Like, what is. And so that's something you don't ever forget. It was so strange. And there was a boy who was younger than me going around telling everybody how she, like, what had happened to her and about what the mortician had to do to reconstruct the back of her. It was awful. And
it's amazing that the detail with which you remember that. That was traumatic,
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So it's a little bit, that was strange. And I think by the time I got older, I think I was reckless in a different way. Like, what difference does it make sometimes? You know what I mean?
Oh, right.
You know, and then you have to have that wake-up call in a different way.
Uh-huh.
From the 815, they say, hey, Patty, our financial planner told us to buy our son a good running safe car and put it in his name. That way, if there's an accident, we can't be sued. We do have him carry a $1 million policy.
Wow.
I was not familiar with that tactic.
I know that's possible. Talk about safeguarding.
Okay, this is another thing. Let's take a break here, but we'll talk a little bit more about binge drinking on campuses and at the holidays. I think that this is something, too, that affects our psyche and there's kind of a coming down period after the holidays, too. And you see people posting, they're celebrating the things they accomplished during the year and what they want to do in 2019. One of our comic friends, Marty DeRosa, said, if you're one of those people that doesn't put your accomplishments up, you're my kind of friend. Right? It's like, okay, good. I don't have a measuring stick. More in a moment on 720 WGN. Dancing. It's Wednesday night. It's Wednesday night, right, Doc? Everyone's having trouble.
Everyone's having trouble. We're dancing. It's a good time.
Everyone's trying to figure out what day of the week it is. It's January 2nd, 2019.
Everyone is trying to figure that out.
I think
that's
the
true.
Bigger issue is when you write the date, you're still writing 2018 right now.
You know what was funny? That 2017, I think, went so sideways for a lot of people that it was very easy to write 2018
very
last year.
So.
Yeah.
This is kind of, I don't know, 2018 was kind of like, That's all right. I can move on or not.
It's so like a bearable year.
Yeah.
It wasn't too bad.
So mm-hmm. we'll see how I do with my check writing. I'm not sure yet.
Most of us are done writing checks, too, aren't we?
That came up last night, and I still write checks, apparently.
Oh, you do?
I do.
Wow. Okay.
I know.
You're one of the few.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out why I write checks, but there it is. Yeah.
You have Cash App. You have Venmo. You have Zelle.
I understand. I have Venmo. I don't have any of those other things. I only have Venmo because when I've been out with friends, they're like, "Hey, can you float me $20? I'll transfer it to your Venmo." And I'm like, "I gotta get another app."
It's in Facebook.
But it does. It's what?
It's in Facebook.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh. Yeah, Venmo is a part of Facebook.
Do you have these things, Venmo and all these apps?
I actually do not have Venmo.
Okay. I got Zelle.
So
I pay my rent.
What?
Yeah.
Just direct deposit.
Yeah, that's how a lot of buildings are taking their rent now.
I send
a note to my landlord. Mm-hmm. It goes to him as an email the bank does something with what I send to him that he can just grab the money that I send.
All right.
It goes right into his bank account. It's simple. It's easy.
Fair enough. I agree. It is convenient. I just haven't apparently moved into the century.
Right. Keep writing your checks.
Okay. Absolutely. Somebody's got to write 2019. Somebody's
got to write checks.
Well, my mom is my landlord, so we haven't set up a direct deposit account with my mom. I just give her a check.
That seems very efficient, actually.
Yeah. Actually, stick to your checks then.
There you go.
Yeah.
Right. It just works out that way. I wish that I had learned better finances when I was. Now we're talking again about teenagers, right? Being responsible. That's another thing that I was telling the story on stage over the weekend. Actually, on New Year's Eve, that when I became head of household, I am the primary breadwinner for my family, and we had to switch everything into my name. And I was like, oh, I guess when the bank sends you letters, you should open those, because I would kind of be like, I got a pretty good idea.
I
think I'm good.
Is someone avoiding potentially bad news?
Well, no. I just always, I figure I, for most of my life, I've been pretty close within a couple $100 maybe. You overdraft your account once and you don't do that again, right? You put in a stop gap so that, right? You go to the bank and go, how do I avoid this next time?
Listen, if it works, Patty, we're not going to argue that. Yeah, that seems completely reasonable thing to do.
Yeah. Whatever gets your boat upstream, keep doing that.
I will say this. For the most part, for the last, I would say, 16 or 17 years, I pay off all my credit cards on time every single month. I pay the balance, and I've hardly ever carry any debt. So that's why I just kind of bought. I'm like, I think I got about this much. And even though it's easy to just go online and look at my bank account.
Right.
I'm like,
phone. They have apps.
I don't do that.
I do that. I do that often.
I'm like, what was that passcode again? What's my password?
If you have a smartphone, it'll do it to your fingerprint.
That's a good point. I know that some of the banks set that up. But another thing that we're talking about is teaching our kids to be more responsible. Like Griffin, okay, here's a sweet story that I tried to be very patient with. So Griffin always has a $20. He's 15. So he's always got $20 in his wallet just in case, right? We get separated or whatever.
Brilliant,
he's got $20.
Why not?
Right? So it's fine that he often will break it. Like when we were in D.C., I don't know if I ever told you this, but I've stalked him on his field trip. That's a story for another night.
We'll talk about that sometime.
Right, we can talk about that tonight, actually.
Maybe at 11. I stalked him on his field trip. And by the way, I watched the movie Taken with Griffin. He goes, oh, now I get it. So...
I understand why you stalk me, Mom. I get it now.
So he always has a $20 bill in his wallet. When we were in D.C. and he was with his class, and I was like in a Uber behind him, he said, "Hey, can you break my $20 bill next time we stop?" And I was like, "What do you need change for?" He goes, "I want to make some donations." So he loves to donate money, and that's sweet and cool and whatever.
Yeah.
Sure, but then he has to understand that I have to give him another $20, so he still has a $20 in his wallet.
Got it.
Okay. So
you want that $20 at least. Beast in his wallet.
Yes. Right. So, this is where it's coming from. And I appreciate that he wants to make donations. So we were at a restaurant that had and this is really sweet. And I was kind of like, I've got to start giving him fives at least. Right. So he said he was in the men's room where they had a bathroom attendant, and that one of the other customers was really rude to the bathroom attendant. So Griffin gave him a $20 tip. And I was like, that's really cool. I've got to start giving you fives.
Yeah,
but on the other hand, I get that. Like, if I don't know that I've ever, have you ever accidentally overtipped somebody and been like, I didn't mean to, and been like, you know what? I made someone's day.
Yes. And
right?
I love overtipping people. I love that.
I do
the vibe of that.
Yeah, I just need him to know what is attached to that. right?
Well, for your 15-year-old, I think you want him to get the idea that, you know, yeah, you don't have to give your whole 20 away in order to be generous.
Right. Yeah. But I also can't imagine he would have stood there and been like, I'm going to take change out of your tip. Neither would I either, right?
Right.
What I tend to do is I'll go someplace and then come back. I hate not tipping. I can't not tip. It's wonderful. It's a great story. And we were also on the table like, oh, that's great. I think you need to get a job. I think we need to figure this out. No, I mean, I'm glad that I'm able to absorb that as much as I can.
Yeah.
I just want him to be financially responsible. And, you know, so we were talking about cars. He doesn't have any desire to drive. He could have a learner's permit now. He could have gotten it over the summer. Didn't have any motivation to do that. So we're clear there. But I do worry about him being around now teenagers who may, I know that he's around kids that smoke pot, you know, uh-huh, kids that drink, kids that are having sex. And that gets, you know, even more of the freedom in college. We were talking about, do you think there's any way to bring that horse back into the barn when it comes to college campuses? Is there any way to educate kids? Like, is it in high school? Is it like sex ed where we need to start at like 8, 9 years old?
It's interesting that you pick that age. I'm actually finishing a book right now where I talk about the teenage years and how they've stretched back because kids have so much access to so much information to about 8 or 9 years old. And we have to start having those talks with kids at really, really young ages, like uncomfortably young ages, but we have to have them.
We do.
Yeah.
You have to build that sense of value.
Yep.
I think, because I think that's kind of what happens. It's that extension of not just immortality, but this feels good. So I'm going to do more of it, even though there comes a tipping point where I'm doing damage to myself.
Yeah.
And then because maybe you have a hangover or you can't remember what happened last night. And then that becomes funny rather than a warning bell to a 20-year-old.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's very alarming. So you want to start early with the idea of self-regulation. And not necessarily does that mean this is coming from a guy who's a teetotaler his whole life. Does that mean total abstinence from everything? Because I think we have to be kind of cognizant of realities, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of our kids, most of our kids, are going to drink at some point, are going to juul or vape at some point, are going to smoke pot at some point. It's going to happen in all likelihood. We just have to prepare for it.
I have a question.
Of course, David.
Back in the 70s, when I started doing this, I remember going to Board of Education meetings where parents were just screaming their heads off. It's my job to teach my kids about sex. And this is the 1970s, and we're talking about high school.
Right.
Has that attitude mellowed any, or are we still dealing with that desire to avoid facing the inevitable until it's too late and they're now grandparents?
That's a great question because I cannot tell you how many parents, what percentage of parents are anxious talking to their kids about sex, about drugs, about the whole, every risky behavior. There is a reluctance to approach any of it with the idea in mind that, you know, ooh, there's this power of suggestion. If I bring this up, I might be giving some tacit permission, you know, and so I'm going to avoid that, or I'll jump in the water real quick. Say, I don't want you to do this. This is a risky behavior. And then I've had that talk. I'm done. I'm out. And that's not very helpful either as a parent.
An ongoing conversation.
Ongoing.
I think that, you know, and maybe there's a way, like, because with Griffin, sometimes it comes with watching something, right? Whether it's like with him, he was 7 years old. It was so sad because everyone got, remember that, you know, when norovirus runs through a school?
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever had the displeasure of surviving that, but my whole family ended up getting it.
It started with
Griffin, and then it swept through Declan, then Steve, and me. And it was, the three of us were really sick. Griffin was the only one that was healthy. And I had to stay awake in order to make sure that Declan didn't choke. I'm being sick.
Wow, Perry.
So Griffin was helping me stay awake, and we were watching Desperate Housewives, and there was a gay couple on the show, and we had never talked about it, and he said, "Why are those men kissing?" And so we started talking about homosexuality and love and all these different things, and that made it very matter of fact.
Yeah.
So that's sometimes the way we do it is whether books that we're reading or movies that we watch or TV shows, and that maybe that's one way to have those sort of conversations.
It's one of my favorite ways.
I
like the idea of watching TV. Mm-hmm. If something's going to come up that you're uncomfortable with or you haven't had the talk with about, and to hit the pause button and say, we're going to have a two-minute conversation about this right now.
Yes.
And it might be a little awkward, but we're doing it anyway.
It's true. You have to pause everything. You have to pause and be in that moment with them, right? Especially if they look confused. There was a book that he was reading called The Green Book, which was not the movie that has just come out, but it was a young adult book. It was more like a fourth grader and up, but because they were accelerated at second grade, he was in a program that they were reading ahead. But this book was about planet Earth is about to die, and these ships are taking mostly the wealthy people, powerful people, and the last ship leaving are all the people with skills, like farmers and engineers and doctors and things like that. But they have a plan, and the kids all know about it too, that if things start to go south, they're all going to take this pill. They're all going to kill themselves.
Got it.
And Griffin kept asking me, he was 7 years old, and he kept asking me, have you read it? Did you read it? Mommy, can you read this book? Mommy, can you read this book? So that's when I learned around that age was that he has questions, but he doesn't quite know how to articulate it. And so, it's always been through storytelling.
So you always want to take that cue. Like, I assume as soon as he said, Mama, can you read this book?
Yeah.
You read that book,
Yeah, I did. And then I had to talk with the teacher. I was like, hey, teacher, Santa Claus is coming next week. It was right before Christmas. I'm like, how about you not have the planet Earth die right before Christmas? But it's actually Miss Shagru, Dan Shagru, the engineer.
Oh, yeah.
His wife is Griffin's teacher. And so we laugh about that now because can we have a talk? I got to have a conversation with you. So one of our listeners says, tell the kid, if you're at a party and drugs come out, drinking, etc., call me and I'll come pick you and any number of kids up. No questions asked, and kids can hang out at our house. Right? Basically they're saying be the safe house for the kids.
Oh, yeah. I'm golf clapping that. That's awesome.
Okay.
Yep. Great advice.
Conversely, I had a boyfriend who grew up in Jacksonville, Illinois, and they would tell me stories about how, like, one of their friends' parents was always the party house.
Yep.
And you know there's always parents like that who, well, they're going to drink. I'd rather they drink under my roof.
Yeah. I spent a lot of time trying to talk parents out of that.
Stop it.
Let's
talk about that.
That is a bad call. There are better ways.
Let's talk about that when we come back. Yep. More in a moment. So they're calling it the safe house. You got to offer the safe house. Thank you, 708. More in a moment on 720 WGN. Listening to WGN Radio. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. Joining us is Dr. John Duffy. Behind the glass, that sounds weird. In the producer's booth. No, that sounds weird. In the booth. Hi.
Kasara. I'm just here.
Producing the show tonight, Kasara Henning. And you can, is that how I say your last name?
That's Heining.
See? I'm glad I asked. Kasara is behind Kasara Heining behind the glass. She will be taking your calls. Be nice to her. Be kind. And that shouldn't just be to Kasara. That should be to everybody.
Yes.
David Jennings.
New Year's resolution.
New Year's resolution for everybody. Unless you're pushed. And then David Jennings is in the newsroom. And we were talking a little bit about reckless behavior and how we talk to our kids about maybe a little bit of, don't do what I did kind of a mentality as well. Greg, what did your teachers are you a teacher, Greg?
Well, I'm a para educator, which means, by the way, Patty, first of all, I have to say, I love your show. You're better than anything that's on Milwaukee radio. So
Thank you. Sorry, Milwaukee.
Yes, thank you for call screener for letting me on too. Thank you, Kasara.
Of course.
But I'm a para educator. So for a long time, I was going into health classes and teaching kids about different things, self-esteem, nutrition, drugs and alcohol, and things like that. And two points that I just wanted to bring up here, and we were very realistic as far as drugs and alcohol, but we had a speaker come in who was hit by a drunk driver, and so we talked about the ramifications of that. And then we also had kids watched a video on a car crash that was, it was fictional, but it was fictional reality, I guess, if you could say, a car crash that happened, you know, because someone in the car was driving drunk. So I think it was very edgy. It was better than anything that I got in my health classes when I was that age.
Right.
But two of the things we told people, just really quickly, Patty, is your parents should never be your best friends when you're that age. And we say that because you need to, parents and kids need to know where to draw the line in, you know, making decisions and making wise choices. Parents should be looked up to as role models and maybe mentors, you know, if they're, but they should never be your best friends. And then the second thing we said is, you know, just before you go, have a couple friends, you know, that you rely on. Let them know, you know, where you're going to be and what they're going to do. So even if you don't feel comfortable talking to your parents, you know, about something, first of all, if you don't feel comfortable talking to your parents, you probably shouldn't be doing it, right? But secondly, have a few friends who know where you are, you know who you're hanging out with, just in case the situation does get risky. And I don't know, Dr. John, if you can speak to either of those two things, but I just think, Patty, those things are so important. And the sad thing is that there's no more health classes. Well, there's not a lot more health classes.
Right, there aren't
in the
a lot.
I
know that Griffin he resists some of the stuff that his health teacher is teaching because he doesn't necessarily agree with the politics of it. Like, they'll talk about marijuana, and he's like, well, actually, you know, for some people who need it medically, I'm like, okay, don't, you know, just get through this.
just get the B or the A and let's go.
Yeah. You'll have plenty of time to debate.
All right, and then you get human growth and development in there, and then it's okay.
Exactly. Well, Doc, what do you think about not being best friends with your
So I've got two thoughts on this.
Yes.
I certainly understand Greg's point. I think some parents overplay this card. What I think we sometimes tend to do, though, as our kids become approach the teenage years, is we become lecturers to our kids and strangers, and so we lose them. We lose their audience. So I think you want to be something like friendly with your kids. You want to laugh with them. You want to continue the relationship you had when they were little.
Sure.
So I think some parents become strangers to their kids who are just lecturing them. I see this a lot.
Really?
Yeah. I encourage parents, like, ease up, loosen up. If you want if you want your voice in the mix, do not lecture. Your kids are not going to listen to your lecture. They'll listen to your story if you have a story and you're connected to them.
Right.
But if you're just a disconnected entity that's lecturing, you're not going to get anywhere.
What do you think about that? I think that makes some sense. It's not. It seems like it straddles that area of not being best friends with them, but helping them connect in ways that are personal to what your experiences have been.
Exactly.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And to Greg's point about having friends you can rely on, kids rely on each other on a Friday or a Saturday night or a Tuesday when they're texting at 2 a.m. and you can't hear them, more so than they rely on any of us if we're really looking at reality. So you want to make sure that your friends have some kids they connect with that you like.
I think you're right. And Greg, I was lucky in high school. I had a friend named Jocelyn who was my rock. Right. Like, she was, you know, she wasn't as flighty as the rest of us. She was, you know, she might have liked boys, you know, but didn't sort of have to be where they were, you know. And because you do take more chances emotionally when you're, you know, you're in love, you think you're in love or whatever.
Sure, of course.
Yeah. Or you'll, you know, go places maybe you shouldn't or do things that, you know, are just not right for you. I think you made a lot of great points, Greg.
Yeah, well, thank you. And I'm going to keep calling in because I like you, Patty. I like you guys a lot.
Thank you, Greg. We like you, too.
It's my New Year's resolution to call in more to Patty Vasquez. So, yep. Okay.
Excellent.
Thank you, Patty.
Hey,
have a good night.
I like that resolution. Thank you.
Very good resolution.
Greg brings up a really good point. And Greg, are you still there? Greg?
Yep.
Greg, I will say this. The one of the things that when I interviewed for this job, the programming director at the time was named Bill White, and he had invited me in to interview. He'd read an essay that I wrote which we don't have to go into any details about. But for some reason, he thought I had an interesting point of view. And part of the interview, because I've been listening to WGN since I was a kid, I said, I've always thought that the biggest asset WGN has are the listeners and the stories that we hear. I mean, all the people that I ever heard calling in to Wally's show or Bobby Collins' show or Kathy and Judy. So, Greg, you're amongst all the great listeners who have been there,
Patty,
for us.
Well, and Patty, if you ever want to do a segment called Ask the Blind Man,
okay.
I am a totally blind man. So, you know, let me know if you ever want to do, you know, that segment. I'm open to, you know,
all right.
answering any questions. So
all
if
right.
you ever want to do, you know.
Do you know what? I'm going to have Cassara connect you and me by email. Sound good, Greg?
That sounds great.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I appreciate it because I think we all have misconceptions. Have a good night.
Yeah, you too.
Thank you. Be well. That's I think that would be interesting. I didn't want to make it generic and be like, you know, have you seen The Bird Box?
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, because that's such a weird thing because, you know, and maybe, and we will talk to Greg about this sometime, because when people find out Declan has a disability,
right.
I describe it similarly to autism, but he doesn't have autism. He has something that's a little bit different. And then people always ask me what he's good at. And it's not the same thing. He's missing part of his brain. It's just easier to explain that way. Feels good. Just feels good hanging out in the Allstate Skyline Studios. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. Ooh, we're changing up the mood right in the middle there. Dr. John Duffy joins me in studio. Cassara Heining? Nope, I'm not going to get it. I'm not. You know what? I'm just going to say Cassara.
Heining. You're going to get it.
Hi.
It's okay.
Heining.
Yes. Hey, look, I have to tell people over and over again, Vasquez. So I'll say it right to someone and they'll say Vasquez back at me. So I get it.
Wait. You mean I've been saying it wrong all this time?
Oh, hi, David Jennings. How are you doing tonight?
I'm fine, Patty Vasquez.
You don't. I have not heard you say it incorrectly.
Oh,
yeah.
Because I always say Patty Vasquez.
Yeah. See, there you go.
Oh,
you got
okay,
it right.
It works.
Yeah. People say Vasquez.
Oh,
yeah.
It's just a K.
It's like K-E-Z.
Yeah. Instead of the Q.
I try not to get a chip on my shoulder unless I say it repeatedly. And then I got to go, I have to stop you. I have to tell you that
I have to go now.
I have to go now. I have to, please say Vasquez. Well, Duffy's such an easy name. Is that like?
People do not mess Duffy up.
No.
Ever.
And that's a good Irish name.
It's a pretty good Irish name. Yes.
Why are you downplaying it? It's a very good Irish name.
No, I'm very happy with it. I would not trade it.
It is Irish, right?
It is.
I'm not sure if I'm making things up or not.
No, it's Irish.
My mother is from Mexico, and I didn't actually. It's a family name, and my last name is actually a more Irish sounding name. My dad was Irish. My mom is from Mexico.
No kidding.
Yes, and I decided to change my name for several reasons. Partly because there weren't any Latino comics except for George Lopez and Paul Rodriguez. When I started out doing comedy, there were very few females, very few women in general. So I thought, you know, I want people to know. I don't want to explain that every time I go on stage, yeah, I'm Mexican. You know, it's funny. If you look up, and this is, I don't know why I'm bringing this up tonight, because Louis C.K., when you Google him, because I wanted to know more about this story,
yeah,
about the leaked set, but he's listed as a Mexican-American comic, and you wouldn't know that. Yeah, he's half Mexican. He was he was born in Mexico. I think his father is I'm not sure, like Eastern European or something.
Does not make a thing of that, does he?
No, and a lot of comics like me are often derided for talking about our ethnicity. But for me, it's part of my story because I grew up with a mom who, you know, came here from another country, and my dad who was like this old, you know, Northside Chicagoan, and everything was over by there, you know, where's the party at, kind of thing. And my mom culturally so different that's it just was the music of my life.
Yeah, it's a rich
story. It's the stories I tell.
Yeah, man.
But I wanted to wait till Cassara comes back because she was curious about this mom stalking story. We were talking about, you know, and this goes along with the idea of not just being best friends but also parents who helicopter. It was very hard for me when Griffin when the whole first week before he started at his new high school, he needed to start taking public transportation. And so I went with him on all the different routes. I was like, okay, we can take the bus to the brown line. We'll take the brown line to the red line. And I was like, okay, do you know what we did there? Were you paying attention to the stops and everything? But I do get really scared, Doc. Like I almost thought about stalking him on his commute to school too.
Listen, I get that. I think a lot of us are bleeding hearts for our own kids.
Yes.
And we want them to be safe and little for and young and innocent for as long as they can be.
Yes.
I totally get that instinct. And to a great degree, I know my wife is listening right now and she's saying, you share that. You would do the same thing, Duffy, and I would.
You would. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I took the train a few weeks ago. I had to catch the Blue Line, and there was a girl on the platform with people talk about backpackers and like they have, you know, they bump you and stuff. But this girl had a massive backpack, and I was going to go around the right of her, and she turned around and I nearly got knocked off the platform. So I told Griffin, I'm like, make sure you pass people on the inside of the platform. I mean, thing I hadn't even thought of.
Right.
Right. I mean, it just could have been anything where I was just trying to, you know, I'm always sort of weaving my way through crowds and in a hurry and, you know, just trying to get around her. But I went toward the outside of the platform.
So do you worry less now that he's getting more savvy about things like where to stand on the platform?
Yeah, I think so. And I'll have to remind him of that again, that mommy almost got knocked off the platform.
Yeah.
But I've been here, and you were here on Halloween. Griffin called me. He's like, hey, I'm at Millennium Park. I'm like, excuse me? He came. I mean, I remember when I was his age, I was already taking public transportation
right.
to Lane Tech.
Uh-huh.
But beyond that, you know, although he did get turned around one time, he came down here and he walked west instead of east, which is a mistake I often made.
Uh-huh.
But he's got a phone. He has no excuse.
Right. He can figure it out. He can track himself.
Yes, he can. He does Google Maps. So here's what happened, Kassara. Here's how I mom stalked Griffin and the 301.
Yes, this is what I've been wanting to hear.
So and I showed Dr. Duffy pictures, and I'll show you pictures during the news as well.
Perfect.
I don't think I posted much online because I didn't want anyone else to know where he was as well. I try to protect his safety, even though I was being creepy.
And you didn't want them to know that you were stalking him either, of course.
No, people knew I was stalking him. I left town telling people. I didn't do it in the order that he was. Like, I wasn't posting when he was at the Lincoln Memorial or when he was at the Smithsonian. So even though most of my friends are here, I'm not sure how extensive their stalking abilities are. Okay. So I was telling Dr. Duffy that ever since Griffin was in preschool, I chaperoned everything, every pumpkin patch. And by the way, that included kids who got motion sickness on the bus.
Oh,
and you
man.
Never get that smell out of your soul. But we went to, you know, every petting zoo, every museum, I even did the overnight trip. You know, they do some of these retreats.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I would go on that and I would be up all night because I was
great.
I didn't
chaperone anything.
I had fun. I was also, you know, some of the kids weren't crazy about me because I was a little stern, you know, because I wanted to make sure everyone was safe. We'd go on a night hike and I'd make sure it was fun, but safe. So I was telling Dr. Duffy, though, when Griffin transferred into the school he went sort of in between grade school and high school, this program for 7th and 8th graders, they made these plans to go to D.C. And I emailed and I said, hey, I can chaperone. They're like, yeah, we're full. I was like, excuse me? Do you know who you're talking to? I am the master at chaperoning. And I thought, how funny would it be if I wrote a story about a mom who none of the other parents want to come along because she's either a buzzkill or has lost kids on other trips or has built up this sort of
repertoire where they just don't want you.
They don't want me. So I imagined it, because even though none of these parents actually knew me, I just thought, how funny would it be if that were the story? So I decided, in order to do research to write the screenplay, I would stalk Griffin on his field trip to Washington, D.C. And it was,
naturally.
I have to tell you, it was the most fun I've ever had on a trip in my, and I'm so sorry, honey. I love my husband, but I mean, I didn't. It was such a fly by the seat of my pants experience. Like, I had Griffin's itinerary. There was a point where I ran from my jetway from where I landed because he was all the way at the other end of the airport. I had flown on American, he'd flown on Southwest, so I ran through, and I actually got to see the honor flight, all the veterans that came in from Chicago, and I was like, thank you for your service, and I'm like running through the airport, and I get there, and I walk into these sliding glass doors right into the middle of his class. So I like had to duck down and behind some chairs, and I see him at the luggage belt, and I text him, I'm like, get off your phone, and he starts looking.
Wow.
He goes, you're being creepy. I know. Isn't this amazing? But I mean, we made it fun. Griffin was really cool about it. And
That is an amazing story. I cannot believe it's true. Was this just an in-joke between you and Griffin?
Me, Griffin, Steve thought it was fun. I told listeners about it. His roommate knew about it. His roommate at the hotel was, and one person thought they saw me. They're like, hi, Mrs. Griffin's mom. And I just kept walking, pretending like I didn't hear them. Because I accidentally walked right through their group again when we were at the Franklin Roosevelt Memorial, and it was. And I have a friend who works there. She actually works for the State Department, and so I went and hung out with her a little bit, and I was lurking like behind pillars at the Lincoln Memorial. It was. Honestly, someday I'll post all the photos, but it was...
Mom of the Year Award goes to you.
No kidding.
So, yeah. But deep down, I will say, as funny as it was and the sort of fictional story that I want to write about it, I will say, we watched Taken over the weekend or during the holidays.
Oh, that's a great movie to watch around the holidays.
All the feel-good right there.
All the good feel-good films.
Here's why. We couldn't agree on a movie. We'd watched a lot of the holiday movies. I wanted to watch Lethal Weapon, which I consider to be an action movie, a comedy, and a holiday movie. And Griffin didn't want to watch it. All in one. But for whatever reason, Taken is one of those culturally significant movies that people make references to or memes or whatever.
Right.
That Griffin was kind of interested in it. And so Griffin... We pause at one moment, like when, you know, her dad has to fly from California on a private jet all the way to Paris. And I go, now do you know why I had to be on the trip? See, anything happened, I would have been right there. I was just a phone call away. See, I wouldn't have to find some rich guy to give me a jet. I would have just been right down the street.
So, are you serious about that? Were you happy to be right there? Were you happy to have him in your sights?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not always. Like one time when I was out to dinner with my friend Claudia, Griffin texted me and he goes, hey, where are you? I go, right behind you. And he goes, well, we're on a bus. So I was like, oops, wrong bus, wrong kid. So it was, and he really had a great sense of humor about it. And I gave myself little missions because I wanted to kind of think of what it would be to write it, what the sort of adrenaline of like trying to find him. I can't find him. I have to get him something. Is it going to be a comedy where I cause some sort of international dispute, you know,
major
situation?
Incident. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So that's the story that I'm working on. But yeah, and here's the thing. I actually thought about like, wouldn't it be funny as a sitcom in general down the road? If, like that's the, cause I thought, well, this would be, is there a sequel to it? Maybe it's first it's just a regular field trip. Then it's the big field trip. But then I thought, what if I decide after he goes to college, I want to go to law school, and the only place I can get in is the same campus where he goes. He's like, Mommy, can we keep this fictional?
This is like the Taken series.
This is
like
where Griffin starts to dig in his heels just a little bit.
It never stops. Like another series of Taken, right? Someone just keeps going.
Well, what is the Taken series? How do they keep taking?
I don't know. They took his daughter, and they took his wife, and they took somebody else.
But they eventually, I don't want to spoil this for anybody, but it gets really nasty in Taken 3, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't want to ruin that.
I've heard it's pretty harsh.
What is the name of that actor in Taken?
Liam Neeson.
Yeah. Every movie he's in, someone's getting taken, and he's trying to bring them back. Even if it's not the Taken series, someone's being taken away, and he has to go bring them back.
He's got a very specific set of skills.
I feel like if I ever see a movie and that happens and he's not the actor, I have to call them like, whoa, What's happening? Something's wrong here.
Just think, the guy in his 60s can still be an action star.
Isn't that crazy? Well,
it's great.
Yeah. There's time for us, David.
Yep.
Get it.
I believe in you guys.
Oh, boy. I believe in them, too.
I think if Dr. Duffy and David Jennings were in a movie together, it would be like an all-star film.
I like that. I like that idea very much.
A buddy comedy. I can see this.
It would be scary.
I'm afraid it might.
Because you'd be the one who'd do the running. I don't run for anything, okay?
He'll keep the car warm.
There you go. I'll be the guy that goes, no, you don't want to run. Why? Because I'm going to shoot you. Because I don't run. I don't chase people, okay? You either give up or I wing you.
That's
all the cool lines, dude.
Yeah. All right, let's come up with some more lines for David Jennings and John Duffy for their buddy cop movie. More in a moment on 720 WGN. Dr. Duffy, has your opinion of me lessened or improved?
Oh, no. Dude,
learning more about me?
Just risen in esteem here, Patty. Absolutely.
Just that I'm willing to take some risks. You know?
Well, I love that, and I don't know where you find the time to stalk Griffin. I've been thinking about that the whole break.
Well, that was, I took 2 days vacation from the station.
Got it.
And by the way, as far as how much it cost, I was able to do the whole thing for, I would say, I used a bunch of miles. I got an Airbnb for about about $70 for each night. A friend of mine took me out to eat. I didn't, you know, it was pretty affordable.
That was very frugal of you.
It was fantastic. Yeah. I had a blast, and I wish I could do it again. I'm like, so where are you going next? You going to Paris? Where's your next trip? Like, they were going to do a trip to Japan, and he said no. I'm like, it's fine. I guess it's too far. I mean, that's some heavy stalking right there. And here's the thing: is that it's not. I think I've spent my life going for the laughs, and we could probably sit down on your couch sometime and figure that out. That one out. But I want to introduce a couple of guys who have a great event coming up called Laughs for Mics. It's going to be headlined by Kristen Toomey and Rena Kalm. Joining me in studio is Larry Bloom and Ricky March. Hey, Ricky and Larry, how you doing?
How you doing?
Great, thanks.
Thank you for coming in studio tonight.
Thanks.
Welcome.
For having us.
Isn't this pretty?
This is great.
Gorgeous.
Is this your first time here?
It is. I could see Larry's car getting stolen on the closed circuit.
It is a little bit different. This is one of those areas where there's the upper, you know, Wacker Drive, lower Wacker Drive. You can get really turned around if you take one of those ramps.
Well, we're suburban guys, so what do you think happened?
You didn't. Don't take any ramps.
No ramps.
So
no ramps.
You're fine. Cabbed in.
No.
We had to do a couple laps. We actually found street parking. It worked out.
All right, not too bad.
It's a little stressful.
I should let people know. I know that a lot of our guests find street parking maybe in a couple blocks away, but I'm not. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's all good.
It's a piece of cake. Come on.
Excellent.
There was one spot that was just teasing us. But it's reserved for the Hungarian consulate.
You know, I don't know that we've talked about that. Have you seen that sign?
I have not seen that sign.
There is one spot that's reserved for the Hungarian consulate.
Is that right?
Just another reason to be hostile towards Hungary.
I don't know that. I don't know how I feel about that. I'm like,
I do not have relatives from Hungary, so it's not possible.
I've never seen.
Didn't we liberate them? Can't I park in their spot?
You would think.
They owe me a spot.
Was there someone in the spot?
I think I donated some relatives to Hungary. They owe me a spot.
Yeah, I don't know how you call that chip in. Was there someone parked in the spot?
No, that was the thing. It was open.
Yeah. I wonder if you can just get a sticker, like make your own, you know, print something up.
Big H.
Sure.
Big H, right? Or maybe the flag of Hungary.
I have to look it up.
Yeah, I think so. Usually it's not too bad. I think those spots in front behind that are more expensive.
You just throw the Diary of Anne Frank on your dashboard.
It takes care of it.
That's all I need
to see. Tell us about Mike and this event that you guys have put together.
Mike was a young comedian.
Uh-huh.
Very young.
And in his 20s. And was coming up on the scene. And then he passed away.
Oh.
Last January, so a year ago. He was 21. Very funny. Funnier and more irreverent than his age. His jokes were really smart and sophisticated. And he had a lot of potential. But he passed away in January. His moms, Pam and Monica, had seen one of our other shows. They wanted to do a benefit to honor him and also start a foundation. And so they got in touch with us to produce this show, which is called Laughs for Mike.
And it's a great show. I know you've got Stephen Curry on there as well with Rena Kalm and Kristen Toomey. Some comics who like telling it like it is.
Yeah.
And it was a little bit of how Mike was.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there's also going to be a pre-show slideshow with pictures of Mike and gigs that he's done. So it's going to be, I mean, it's an interactive portion, then comedy.
That's a lot of fun. I think it's a good idea and a wonderful way to make a tribute to a young man.
Yeah. And the proceeds are going to his foundation that his mother set up.
So this is something she has set up to promote comedy and compassion and sort of this community.
Right. There were issues of anxiety and depression. That's part of the situation. So they want to that's why they put the foundation, to kind of create some resources.
And that was something I wasn't sure if you wanted to share, because I know that there have been a couple of young men in the last couple of years in comedy who have struggled with depression and have lost their lives. And it's shocking, because you think of, you know, people on stage making people laugh, and the sort of struggle that people don't realize it takes to like be that vulnerable on stage. It's hard.
It hits a nerve.
Yeah.
But then they expect you to be that same person when you get off stage, and you're not.
Sometimes my mother gets upset. She'll be like, you're too angry. But she also thinks I'm funny, and I have to be like, you know, it comes from the exact same place.
It does.
You're going to have to accept them both.
Well, and that's the thing, too, is like, because Sarah mentioned earlier, you know, make kindness your new resolution for the year, right? But I also have, like, I actually have a company called With Kind Words, right? But then when people hear me say certain things or act a certain way, they're like, well, you're not, okay, in the right place and time, you know, and I'm trying to manage it, too. But we all have this, comics have, you know, one of the reasons we do comedy is that we're trying to filter through some of the, whether it's anxiety or rage that we have, you know, that it's hard to explain that to people. The other thing that I learned, for whatever reason, Doc, I found this out early on by watching other comics and being aware.
Right.
Self-awareness is the hardest thing.
Very.
And what I realized was is that the sort of rush you get from a great show, right, is so makes you so buoyant, and you want to hold on to that, and you keep chasing that, right? And the pitfalls, the pain of rejection, of having a terrible show, is such a pit of despair that it's hard to come out of, right? So you keep vacillating between these really great moments and these really awful things, and the way people, you know, whether you're heckled or people won't laugh, or a booker says they don't think you're funny, or someone says something awful to you, and the hardest thing to do, and this is not just true of comedy, it's true of life, the hardest place to exist is right in the middle, to appreciate the good things, you know, and acknowledge the bad things. But if you can just stay right here, you can maintain, and that's not always easy to do.
The middle. That's the dream.
Yeah.
Not without medicine. That's anyway. What,
yeah. Right. No, it seems like the trickiest thing to do, and I think comedy is one of the most difficult things you can do, and one of the most self-facing, you know, self-revealing things you can do in this world, and to hold that middle and find it takes an awful lot of ego strength that not many of us have. I think there's no profession that isn't like that is immune to depression and anxiety, but I've got to think if you're willing to be up there on that stage, it is more likely to strike you than if you're out there in the audience.
So there's a lot of opportunity, you know, when you're performing, to actually put that right out on the table,
right,
as a job, as opposed to, like, if you're an accountant, you can't just start revealing yourself at a client meeting.
Right.
Did you have a great show? Yeah, I sold all my T-shirts.
Right.
And that's it. And you're walking back from Rensselaer, Indiana on a cloud.
Yeah.
But that's what you remember. And then the next night, you're in Keokuk, Iowa, and nobody's laughing.
Don't even get me started. We'll tell some more stories and talk more about Michael Yankovic. Is that how you say his name?
Yankovic.
And the foundation is the Michael Yankovic No Joke Foundation, promoting comedy, community, and compassion. And they're having a show this January 5th, which is on Saturday. Mm-hmm. I had to do the calendar in my head. That's how comics do. Like, where am I on the 5th?
Yeah.
And it's featuring Kristen Toomey, Rena Kalm, and Stephen Curry. It's a great show. You can go to funnierbythelake.com. And again, it's Laughs for Mike. We're talking to Ricky March and Larry Bloom. Dr. John Duffy joins us in studio. I'm going to, you know, one of these days we're just going to get a couch and I'm just going to tell you about the all the...
Right on.
And then when I was in third grade...
I've got one in the car. Perfect.
Check your parking apps. Everyone check your parking apps. We have Larry Bloom and Ricky March in studio with us, Dr. John Duffy. And did you guys get the parking app? You paid the meter with the parking app?
Oh, of course.
All right. I actually do love the parking app. I know I'm a big dork with that.
It's so
one
cool.
App. One app that she has for sure.
Stop. Wait. Let me see what other app you might think that I have is useful. Do you have all the apps?
I have pretty much.
You have pretty much every app? You have Venmo?
I have PayPal.
I'm minimal on apps.
I have AMC. I can buy my tickets right on my phone for when I go to the movies.
Look at you.
See?
You're ready to go.
Grubhub? Does that count?
Yeah, I got that.
Yeah. You have Groupon?
Not anymore because I was spending too much money on stuff and I was like, yeah.
Do you use Ebates?
What is Ebates?
Ebates is a website where you can shop online and then you'll get money back for all of your purchases.
Okay.
That was a very good ad.
Do you find that you're right? Yeah. Can we? Let's write that down for sales. Ebates now sponsor.
I see the commercials late night.
Right.
Yeah. They're very really excited. And they're legit.
Those people in the commercial are very. Yeah.
All right. I was not familiar with that one.
Any Ebates. Online shopping you do, like for the holidays, I think I got like 6% cash back from Kohl's, 10% back from Target.
Wow. Yeah. That's not. I use Coupon Sherpa. coupon Sherpa. If you're in a store, like a lot of like the ones you just mentioned, you can actually just find a coupon while you're at the cash register. Oh. When they ask, do you have any coupons? I'm like, yeah, let me pull up my coupon Sherpa. And then,
And then if you have Ebates, you can link it to your card and you'll get cash back for in-store purchases.
See, what is happening?
I get really stressed out with all the apps and the doubling. I guess I'm just...
I know.
At an age where I'm like,
I can't.
That's a lot of effort.
That's a lot of
to
input.
To buy a shirt at Kohl's. I don't know. A lot of effort.
Too many people.
I don't
want
to try it on, let alone start downloading.
I don't want the Russians to know that I'm here right
now. That's right. Groupon is the worst in that. I had to buy something with Groupon recently, and I knew I was digging a hole where I'd be fighting those emails every day.
Why did you have to buy something from Groupon?
Because he's Jewish.
Because I wanted to prepay for something, and I could only do it really through Groupon. So I had to go through that route, and it took me like 3 weeks to finally taper off all the emails I was getting every day from Groupon.
See, I could see
even
that.
Even though I opted out, it just took forever.
Yeah. The worst is when you have an app and it's like it somehow is now your cover screen. If you don't get rid of the ads, that's the worst.
What's worse is then they give you notifications. Hey, we've got a snow skiing trip for you, Rick.
Yeah.
No.
I have to. That's why I don't have Groupon on my phone. Do you get those alerts like deal nearby?
Yeah. Well, actually, no. I turned that off so it can't follow my location.
let them know you don't want them to bother you.
Yeah. Or you can turn off like push notifications. So that way, like the notifications cannot push to your home screen anymore. I do that for all my apps. I don't get any notifications at all.
See, I gotta sit down with my phone with Kasara and have her fix my phone. Fix my life, Kasara. Could you help me out?
I'm not Ayana. I cannot fix your life, but I can help you fix your phone.
You got a technical and you got a psychiatrist.
I'm trying to cover all my bases.
There you go.
And I got a whole team.
It's a really good way to kick off 2019.
And you should see how many lawyers I have. We are talking about the Laughs for Mike event coming up this Saturday night, January 5th. And it's going to be at the Buffalo Grove Community Arts Center, which is at 225 McHenry Road. Go to laughsbythelake.com. Funnier by the Lake. So Laughs for Mike. I combine the two things. It's right above. See it like on my screen. Funnier by the Lake. It's the event is Laughs for Mike. Join us for a hilarious night of comedy in support of Michael Yankovic. It's the No Joke Foundation promoting comedy, community, and compassion. Taxi driver Bob wanted to join the conversation. Hey, taxi driver Bob, how are you doing?
Good. It's cold out here. But anyway,
it's cold out here for a taxi driver.
Yeah, it's too cold. I was wanting to bring up the app called Nextdoor. Have you ever used it?
No, there's an app called Nextdoor.
I use Nextdoor. I use the website. It actually is. It's a hyper local community kind of social media.
Okay.
Site.
If you go to a restaurant that you like and you think it's really great and everything, you can let people know about it. I kind of used it to promote my taxi service kind of in a obscured way, and it's worked, but, there's, you know, like people, like have problems with their cable, though I've been having problems with my Xfinity and that just blew up the Nextdoor thing. I mean, everybody was going crazy with that. But it's really good app. You have to check it out. It tells you about all the local things around where you live at that are good to check out.
There you go. Well, that makes sense. And now, is Funnier by the Lake on Nextdoor?
I promote shows that we do because we do.
That's
shows.
Great.
Yeah, so I usually promote. I promote them on Facebook. I promote them on the website. But I also, I'll put them on. You can add events on Nextdoor.
That's a great idea. So. Oh, thanks for the tip, taxi driver Bob. And now I owe you a tip.
Have a good night.
Have a good night, everyone. Tip taxi driver Bob. I like the idea of sometimes on Google Maps, if they ask me if I'll rate something, I'm like, sure. But then they keep bothering you. Like, you did such a good job last time. Will you rate this one? I'm like, no, I'm done. Just leave me alone.
I had somebody actually just threaten me over a bad Yelp review.
Oh.
Yeah, I was like, hey, this lady's not honest. And that's all I said. And then,
she threatened you?
Yeah, no, her husband.
Oh boy!
Violence.
I don't do. Who does online reviews?
Yeah, I do sometimes, but I never rarely. I only compliment. I don't. I try not to do any negative reviews.
Oh,
I know. I know. People should be warned.
See, that's keeps the thing. Keeps it safe, nice. I guess.
It's like voting. Yeah. You're just going to end up in jury duty or something. You know? They're going to tie that in somewhere. Facebook and Yelp, they're going to tie it in. You're going to get, they find you.
Right. It's like, I don't want to get involved. I don't want to get involved. That's right. Leave me out of it. So the event is this this Saturday night. It's Laughs for Mike. You got to go to Funnier by the Lake, celebrating the life of Michael Yankovic and the new foundation, No Joke Foundation, promoting comedy, community, and compassion. Featuring and headlining this event is going to be nationally touring comedians Kristen Toomey and Rena Kalm, and the special guest is Stephen Curry. And I know that people are going to have a great time at this event. And tell me a little bit about the venue. I've never been, I don't think I've been to the Buffalo Grove Community Arts Center. The
Buffalo Grove Community Arts Center is, used to be a synagogue, right?
It used to be a synagogue.
And then they rebuilt everything on the inside.
Everything in Buffalo Grove used to be a synagogue.
Right. Even the Marriott.
Or will eventually be a synagogue.
Right. Okay.
And that's got, and we live in Highland Park, so to say that means that, you know.
And the theater, it's a 300-seat theater.
Oh, great.
And it's a full, they do a lot of plays, and this is the first time they're doing stand-up.
Oh, really? Yeah. Let's make sure it goes well so that we always need another place where we can do special events.
Absolutely.
It's
or
really
just
nice.
Regular events.
It's really nice. It was actually just renovated probably this year. So
okay.
It's
oh,
all
great.
New. It's all very nice.
So, and that's the thing. Comics, when we walk into a venue, we're like, oh, this is good. You just get that feeling of what the acoustics will be like. There's great sight lines. That always makes a difference.
Sight lines. Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I do, because you don't get them everywhere.
Well, I performed one time. There's a place in, I want to say it's somewhere in Ohio. It's a renovated, it's a church, right? But they didn't gut the church. They just made the basement into a brewery. And then you perform, people, the seats are in pews, and the comics perform at the altar. It's the most surreal thing, but it's great for comedy. Yeah,
are you sure
enough.
This was a comedy show?
Yes, it's called Father John's.
You didn't have to take your shoes. It was some sort of cult situation.
Now I have to take this place had the best food, and they actually grow their own cattle, like just a few miles away. This is what you learn on the road. You get to see these great places that you would never otherwise learn about.
You miss North Dakota, admit it.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to go that far. The farthest I've ever been in North Dakota, Minot, the Air Force Base. That's a 19-hour Amtrak ride, one way.
Yeah.
No, I don't miss it. I mean, the people were great.
When, before the oil thing came, I used to take the run that was, it was 5 days.
So. Muller? Was it the Muller run?
Yeah.
And it was like, what? Ken Muller was a booker throughout the Midwest.
Right, exactly. So we would start in western North Dakota and then come into Minot and then two nights in St. Cloud.
Okay. I never did St. Cloud. My run was Minot and then it was Rapid City and then I was supposed to go up. I think I had to go to Rapid City for the week. They had that club at the old fire station, and then you had to go to Minot, which doesn't make sense.
No.
It was terrible.
Yeah.
But I quit in the middle of the run.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, I told Ken to stick it. I did. To tell you. I told you. Sometimes comics just get mad. Yeah.
Had you arranged for a way to get back
quit
in the middle of nowhere?
My husband and I, we were driving my CRV. I wanted to show him the Badlands, which are beautiful. Again,
amazing.
I've
never done comedy out there, but the Badlands are amazing.
No, that's the thing about doing comedy, that you see parts of the country that you might not otherwise.
I will tell you, I would never have gone to Teddy Roosevelt National Park if I wasn't there.
Yeah.
And it was gorgeous.
Yeah.
Think of all the places you can have your dreams crushed.
Yeah, no kidding.
And if you weren't doing comedy, you would just enjoy it as a vacation.
Right. Well, that's the thing.
That's dimension.
Yeah. As long as you have the right attitude about it.
Right.
And that's part of what we're talking about, too, is this new foundation for Michael Yankovic. I'm getting everyone's name wrong, and I don't want it. And his family has started this in his name in order to promote this community. Now, what are the thoughts as far as how this will go? Is this for comics or just in general as sort of compassion through comedy and connecting with other people?
I think it's first of all, it's to highlight Michael and Michael's life.
Yeah.
And that's why Steven is on there, because he's a good friend of Michael's. And we just basically want to promote the foundation and also stand-up comedy in the suburbs.
That's great.
Because there's not a lot of places.
And that's the thing, is that they're really, I mean, a lot of people don't want to come from the suburbs to go downtown, you know?
Right.
That's, you know, when I started Funnier by the Lake, that was kind of the goal, to bring show the comics that you would see at Zany's, bring them up to the suburbs,
yes,
so people didn't have to schlep all the way down to the city and deal with every inconvenience and expense with that.
Well, that's the thing, is that people want to have things convenient, and they also want to have people in their community. Did you see the one from Brian? How do you grow cattle?
Yeah, I was going to say something, but
hey,
you
Patty, how do you
invited
you raise,
us here.
They raise their own cattle, for crying out loud.
I was picturing the rows and rows
they
of
also
cattle.
Have, they also have their own farm, so I combined the idea. They raise a lot of their own produce. They raise their cattle. See, I can't get either one of those verbs correct. I'll have to show you this this venue here. I think you can go through, but that's the that's Father John's in Ohio.
Wow,
it's a really beautiful venue. I don't know if I don't know if it's still open or not. Now this picture's from 2017. I bet you it seemed like a huge undertaking in Bryan, Ohio was where it was. I don't think it's open anymore. It might be. Now someone find out for me. Is Father John's in Bryan, Ohio still open? We're gonna go right now. Let's road trip.
Let's all check right. it out.
But you know you want to go see the comics that are performing at the Buffalo. I've just lost my the event. I'm going to have to scroll back through it. Wait a minute. It's Funnier by the Lake. It's the event for Michael Yankovich. It's the Laughs for Michael Yankovich Foundation. It's really something that everyone should get involved in and be a part of. It's going to be a wonderful event, and it's going to be featuring Kristen Toomey, Rena Kalm, Stephen Curry, a lot of great laughs, and you can go to funnierbythelake.com. I'm trying to get the information. I'm stalling to get the phone number.
You can say that web just as many times
funnier,
as you want.
Funnierbythelake.com, and you have other venues. What are some of the other places you guys are doing comedy on the North Shore or up in the suburbs?
We do another dinner show at Max and Benny's.
The Comedy Nash.
John Sobel, one of my favorite people on the planet. Yeah. He's asked me to do that. I know I've got to.
The Comedy Nash.
Yes. That's great.
And then we do a show at Maggiano's in Vernon Hills.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Hey, I love it. Do the comics get some pasta?
Free dinner, all the wine you want.
Big meatball.
And money.
There you go. That sounds like a deal.
Uh-huh.
I like that.
And free parking.
Oh, now see, now you got me. Free parking. I love the Zanies in Rosemont, but I'm often worried I'm going to be trapped in that parking lot.
I can never find my way.
I have to. I need to leave a trail. I need to. Jeannie Dugan says she was waiting for a shaman to come lead her back to her car. More in a moment with our guests. Again, go to funnierbythelake.com for the event this Saturday, January 5th. We'll talk more in a second on 720 WGN. Sharing too much information off the air. I'm sharing too much information off the air. We're talking about this great event coming up on Saturday, January 5th. That's this Saturday. And it's our friends from Funnier by the Lake, Ricky March and Larry Bloom. Larry, thank you so much for reaching out and asking me.
No problem.
People always ask me how to get on my show. And I'm like, ask me? And I've had you just ask. I mean, I can't always accommodate, but a lot of the comics, a lot of the performers in the city, I can't track everybody down for events. You know?
I do.
You right?
Yeah.
Self-promotion's hard, though.
Sure it is.
Yeah, comics are the worst at that.
Horrible.
Yeah.
I'm a shameless promoter, that's what I always say.
Well, that's fine, too. Someone's got to do it. Are you good at promoting, Dr. Duffy?
I am not. I just hope that my practice promotes itself to some extent.
People find you.
Seems to work okay.
Yeah. Well, we'll keep we'll keep retweeting your stuff too.
Who's your target patient?
I tend to work with teenagers, young adults, and their parents.
I'm out.
Sorry, man.
Me too.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's funny because I used to think about maybe coming up with Griffin. It's interesting to watch somebody who is aware that they have anxiety. Griffin is like hyper aware of that. And we're talking a little bit about dealing with anxiety and performers in particular. Michael Yankovic, a young comic who passed away last January, and this event is in his honor. And we invite everyone to come out for this evening of live comedy to support the brand new Michael Yankovic no joke foundation. So it's no joke, but it is about spreading humor and compassion and awareness, I think, when you're
exactly.
struggling. Yeah,
I mean, you've seen both our headliners mm-hmm. work, so you know how good a show that's going to be.
Yeah, Kristen Toomey and Rena Kalm
together.
Yeah, fall down funny.
Yeah, it's going to be incredible, and it's for such a great cause.
It is. It really is. Go to funnierbythelake.com. And the phone number, if you want to call instead, is 847-850-2152. It is a special event that's going to be at the Buffalo Grove Community Arts Center. And that's out at 225 McHenry Road, right there in Buffalo Grove, over by there. And it's a brand new venue, too, for comedy this year.
First time doing comedy.
That's also, by the way, since we were talking about them, catered by Max and Benny's. They're part of it too.
Wow.
See, now I got to call John. John Sobel sent me a New Year's little card and stuff, and he has some of the those. Now you're making me hungry for potato pancakes for Lucky's.
How about the Nosher's Delight?
Oh, it's all good.
That's insane. That's an insane meal.
Have you seen their cookies at Max and Benny's?
I have. They're amazing.
Yeah, they do the best cookies.
Yeah.
The best is seeing John Sobel. He has a picture of him and Princess Leia cookie with Carrie Fisher when she was at the Wizard World a couple years ago before she passed away. Yeah, did you ever see that?
No.
Oh yeah, I'm surprised he doesn't have like a whole wall.
He has that picture at Max and Benny's. Yeah. I've seen it.
How would you not? And I know that Kristen Toomey and Arena Calm and Steve Curry are going to have a blast. And you mentioned that you're also going to have a slideshow and talk a little bit about Michael's life. And is his mom going to speak?
And not during the comedy segment, but before the show, both his moms are going to talk.
I'm sure that a lot of the community is going to come out and support.
Was from Buffalo Grove. That's right. Why we're doing it there.
It's a really wonderful idea. It's a great event.
Yeah, if it was Woodridge, it'd be stupid.
They wouldn't have called me if it was Woodridge.
Now, what made you start Funnier by the Lake? What got you guys involved?
Well, I started Funny by the Lake in 2014. Literally, there was no comedy up on the North Shore. There really was none. At least there was none with any consistency. So that's why I started to like I said earlier, to bring the shows to bring shows that people would see in the city, those comics, up on stages on the North Shore.
Yeah,
I always say that, you know, because the affluent can't laugh at the help all day.
Oh boy,
they gotta take a break. they gotta take a break.
Your words, not mine. I didn't say anything. I got stories. Huh?
And I was booking Flabby at the Abbey for 3.5 years. Then the fire came and the Abbey went away.
I know. I absolutely love the Deirdre. I know Deirdre and Bertie. And,
oh, yeah.
The Loonies are such a great family.
The Loonies
family.
Are great.
Yeah.
Well, Tom is.
Abbey Pub, by the way.
Yeah, Abbey Pub.
Tom, what are we talking about? No, Tom, all right. Okay. All right.
So... that's how we do it in comedy.
Apparently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I had a relationship with a lot of comedians in the city.
Sure.
So when Larry started booking more shows, he asked me to join him because of my knowledge of the comedians. And of course now, it's 3 years later, everybody's new, everybody's changed. So we spend time going to open mics in the city, not so much to get up, but just to see other people.
Oh, yeah, to see new comics, yeah. And a lot of comics seem to be really developing their craft here, which they did a lot of in the 90s and 2000s, but then there was this huge wave of moving to Los Angeles, which I tried to jump on, and then my dad had to get sick and whatever. But I make jokes, I know. But, I mean, I love that I stayed, too. I mean, once you make that commitment and the kind of career you can have wherever you are is also important to realize as well, don't you think?
Absolutely.
And that's why... venues like yours are so important.
I mean, I'm 62 years old and I'm still here, and I don't see me going to LA just tomorrow.
And you know, if there are comedians listening, they can go to funnierbylake.com. they can submit yeah,
right on the website.
I'll send you a link to one of my videos. Do that right now.
Please.
Do that.
Because you have no credits, really.
You give Patty a shot. You can give her a shot.
Yeah. I know that John Sobel's been wanting me to come out there, but it was hard with the show and like, you know, but I will. I will, if you'll have me.
We
I would love to come out.
We can have you to a Maggiano show.
That would be fun.
Because you can get better food there, right?
It's not about the food. It's not always about the food.
And you'll be out of there by 8:30.
Well, that's perfect.
Yeah.
Is it on a weeknight or is that on a
Monday?
It's on Monday.
And we sell it out. We sell out a show on a Monday in Vernon Hills.
That's just so funny to me.
Our next one is the 14th, and it's sold out.
Well, there you go. Well, then you can't go to that one, everyone, but you can go to the great event they have coming up. Laughs for Mike. That's January 5th. Go to funnierbythelake.com. You can join us for a hilarious night of live comedy in support of the Michael Yankovic No Joke Foundation. See, I got it right once.
Yes, you did.
Promoting comedy, community, and compassion, and that's going to be featuring headliners Kristen Toomey and Rena Kalm and special guest Stephen Curry. It's at the Buffalo Grove Community Arts Center at 225 McHenry Road. Call 847-850-2152 for more information. And don't forget Funny by the Lake, and I will see you guys at Maggiano's one of these Mondays in Vernon Hills.
I'll book you in January right now.
Let's
right now.
Thanks for having
us. I have my calendar in front of me. I got to get my calendar. I will do it. I will do it. And I had to do. Here's the problem. I can't do Maggiano's before I do Max and Benny's because I don't think that John Sobel will ever speak to me again.
All right.
So we'll figure that out first.
You will, we will.
All right. All right. We'll work it all out. Thank you so much, you guys.
Thank
and
you.
I wish you the best of luck. And please
Thanks
let me know of
us.
Other. Of course, any other events you want to let me know about, let's check in.
All right, we'll do.
All right. And bring some comics too. Well, you guys are funny. I don't need the whoever you want. Hey, Doc, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Is that a John Duffy? How long are you going to say Happy New Year to people? I'm just curious.
How long is it appropriate?
Yes.
I will probably be doing that for at least a couple of weeks. I'm guessing two weeks.
You're giving it a couple of weeks.
I'm giving it a couple
of
weeks.
Well, I'll be honest. One of the reasons that I saw your post today about your podcast, Better, with you and your wife on WGN Plus, and I was like, I really need to talk to Dr. Duffy. I know how I can do that. I can have him on the show. And then I saw an Instagram post by our guest on the line, our very own Domiti Pongo, and he was talking about the things that he's been doing and what his plans are and how 2019 is going to be great. And I was like, I want to talk to him as well. Hey, Domiti, how are you doing?
Hey, Patty, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. And you are not. I was like, hey, come on down. And you're like, that would be very hard for me to do. Because where are you right now?
I'm in New York right now.
What are you doing in New York? Are you hanging out with the MTV people?
I am. I'm doing some freelancing out here for MTV, helping them get this new project they got off the ground, man. It's a Twitter live show called Need to Know. It's on our Twitter page at MTV News. And I do two news reports a day and a panel a week, and it's a lot of fun. But I'm all the way in New York right now, and I miss y'all. I miss y'all.
I've watched a couple of the Twitter web series as well, and I love the panel that you have. I love the diversity, the different voices. I also kind of love it. Can I say it almost has like a 1960s set feel to it, though?
It does. it's a really retro set. It's like all of these like psychedelic colors and panels in the background.
I'm like, is this like the love connection? What am I? I love the feel of it, and I think that you're such a wonderful and dynamic interviewer. Great job, Domiti.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And for the, I'm going to watch some 70s shows so I can get my vibe right. I'm wearing tie-dye tomorrow to work.
Yeah, there you go. So well, you have to have like one of those microphones like Ray Bradbury had. Was it Ray Bradbury? What was the name of the? No.
Do you mean Gene Rayburn?
Gene Rayburn.
Really?
Ray Bradbury was the writer. Everyone stop texting me. Stop texting me. I know he was a sci-fi writer. I need an app for when Patty gets all the names wrong. Gene
Rayburn.
Gene Rayburn.
Match Game. The Match Game guy.
Yeah, where did I get those? He had that really long, skinny microphone, Domiti. He had like this.
The long, skinny classic one.
Exactly.
I call it the Soul Train mic.
Is that a Soul
Train? Yes, yes.
Did they have that on Soul Train?
Perfect. Yes, they did. Exactly, Domiti.
That's the kind of microphone I see you having on that set.
Classic.
So when they put together the panel, like how do they work that out with you as far as like the topics that you're going to cover and what MTV is trying to deliver to the audience?
Yeah, so they have. So we got some great writers, Sam Griffel, Molly Kiernan, and they put together different segments. Like one of the segments is Come At Me. So it's like, it's your chance to say something that is your strong opinion about whatever it is, be it a pop culture topic, a political topic, or something as stupid as sparkling water, which I did last week, which I truly hate sparkling water. We'll talk about that later. But it's one of those segments where you just kind of put it all out there. It's kind of a fun segment, gets everyone warmed up. But then we have topics where we'll kind of break down what happened throughout the week. So, you know, the week that, you know, President Bush died, we talked about that and what it means when people pass away and what their legacies are and how the country kind of processes that. And the main fix is that it's young people who are being themselves but are also equally as intelligent as they are funny, as they are informed about what's happening, so that that MTV demo can become more informed, can use all of that energy that they have as they, you know, push progressive ideas and as they move around and become Twitter activists and all this stuff, that we arm them with information while at the same time appealing to their, you know, proclivities toward entertainment and fluff a little bit too.
What has been the reaction that you've gotten from, not just from your friends, but people who are discovering you now? You know, what is the feel like with this web series?
It's been like, it's funny, Patty, like I think sometimes, I don't know if you get this too, having done media and radio for so long, like the vet that you are, that sometimes you forget how big the platform of the show is. And so sometimes it's like, oh, I'm just going to go to New York for a few weeks, launch this program real quick. It's going to be on Twitter. Not a big deal. I'll be back to Chicago in a few. And then I tweeted the first one and the love has been overwhelming. And, you know, I don't have a crazy Twitter following. I've got like 3,000 followers. But the first video got 55,000 views initially, so it blew past the expectations considering my personal, you know, they have a platform, but I also have one as well. And so overwhelmingly, those hits came from Chicago, from WGN radio listeners, commenting, people I've never met, people have become friends over the past year and a half that I've been here at GN, and people from past radio stations and things I've worked on. It's been overwhelmingly positive, especially in the greater Chicago network. And then at large, it's been well received too. You know, we've got some folks commenting. If you look at the threads, you'll see them. But then you got a few of the trolls that make their way in too. Oh, so it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
It's fun arguing with them too.
Well, don't engage. I mean, I don't know.
Yes. As long as they engage, it's good. If no one's engaging, that's when you have a problem.
Maybe. So tell me, you have a speech coming up at Northeastern Illinois University, NEIU.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And how are you feeling about the preparation for that? Because I was telling Dr. Duffy, like, maybe he can give you some visualization, some, like, techniques if you're worried at all. Are you feeling good about it, or where are you emotionally on it?
I'm feeling good. I did a speech there for, I did a keynote for a ceremony they had last year for February. And it was crazy. I did it was a 15-minute talk and an address I did there. And I was the keynote. I thought I was just coming to speak. And then after I spoke, they presented me with the Excellence in Media Award at the award ceremony. And it was already an award ceremony. They're awarding all these great people with illustrious resumes. And I'm like, yo, y'all got the right person? I was just here to do a speech and get out the way. So because I've built kind of this relationship, there is a sense of comfort and comfortability I feel with the audience just in general. And then this past year, I've done more work and research on King's legacy than I had in previous years. You know, this was 2018 was the 50th anniversary of his assassination, and Ryan Burrow and I from the GN Newsroom went down to Memphis to record these two audio documentaries for WGN Radio, and I wrote some pieces for the Sun-Times about King. So I've really been taking in so much content about him that it's going to be kind of cathartic to release all of it in one fell swoop and just kind of, you know, unpack all of that with the folks. So following the speech is like a 30-45 minute Q&A. It's a long thing. I don't even know how I'm going to be interested that long. That's probably the most thing I'm scared about.
You'll be great. The part about being for the Q&A, you're worried about being interesting?
Yeah, because that's a long time to talk and ask questions to some dude on the stage, right, ain't it, Patty?
I don't know. You'll be fine. But let me ask you this then. So is that going to be all on Martin Luther King Jr.?
Yeah, it's all about King. And what I'm going to do, a sneak peek at how I'm putting it together, I want to make parallels between where most people are in their 20s and where King was in his 20s. Because if you get that, he got his PhD around 25, or what is it, 19 or something? He got one of his degrees at 19, another at 25. And he took over the SCLC, Southern Christian Leadership Conference, while he was still in his 20s. So it sounds like that's something, you know, it sounds impossible. But when you read his autobiography, you find that he had some of the same fears, some of the same trepidation, some of the same anxieties that all of us had at that same age. So in our own ways, we can embody what King was able to do by pushing through our fears, pushing through what it is that we've been through. And, you know, I'm going to give some context beyond that 50 years later. Where's Black America today? Where's America period today? And how do the March for Our Lives movements, you know, build on the back of King's legacy, but also incorporate in that personal thing, moving towards your goals? What can you do to push through that fear and anxiety?
And that's a fascinating area, I think, for people to try to understand. Because here's the truth of it. Some people don't want to understand, and you have to be okay with that part, too, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Everything isn't for everyone, you know. I think in some sense, the most interesting people are the people who are able to, unfortunately, is manifested its way in the wrong way in the political atmosphere, but outside of politics right now, the best audiences are niche audiences. When you have a comic that has that cult following that he can depend on, he can count on those people. No matter what he does, they're going to follow what it is that he does. And I think that the same goes for anything that we do. Trying to cast the widest net possible might not always be the perfect thing. Sometimes it's just talk to who you know is listening.
By the way, the 412's been texting, and they say that you're not coming back to WGN. You're a big star now, and you are network quality. He's so professional.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. I'm coming back. Don't you say that. I'm coming back home. Thank you so much.
I know. I'm like, wait a minute. I feel like I just got to know you here at WGN. You got to come back at least once in a while.
I've been on the air every week too since I've been gone. I think I have like detachment issues. I've been like, anybody want me on the show? Anybody want to report? Anything? No, good. Okay.
All right, fine. I'm fine.
Okay.
Well, then you're gonna be going on a big trip. Tell us about going to Ghana.
Yes, and then this is the one I'm most excited about. February 28th through March 9th, I plan these annual group tours to Ghana. I've been doing them since 2016, and 2019 will be my fourth, actually. And so we take groups of 20, about 20 is what we try to do, and we take them on a cultural excursion to the slave castles and slave dungeons in Africa to learn about what that history was like and more about the transatlantic slave trade. For an upcharge, some people do their DNA and ancestry before they go there, and we'll try our best to kind of trace their lineage. You know, if you find out you're from Ghana, maybe you're from, you know, Sierra Leone or somewhere close, we'll have the tour guys talk about where different Africans were captured and enslaved and see if you can kind of retrace some of those steps. And it has been like a spiritual awakening for a lot of my travelers. And then we also do some philanthropic work. We go to schools, we visit the school in Cape Coast for the deaf and blind, donate some money and some supplies and spend time with them, dance and, you know, eat food with them. It's a really cool experience. It's about 10 days. And I've got the information on my website, which is Dometi, D-O-M-E-T-I. .net and just click on Ghana and it'll have everything you need to know.
Doc, I'm seeing the same expression in your eyes that I think I'm expressing. Go ahead. You're trying to wrap your mind.
Dometi, I am blown away by you. You're just such a drag to talk to. You need to bring a positive vibe to this thing or it's just not going to work out. No, you're really amazing. And it's unbelievable to hear everything you're involved in. It's so impressive.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. It's been folks like you. Like you, I don't know what it is. Lately, especially in a city like Chicago, people have just taken me under their wing and just shown me so many different opportunities, and I'm just riding the wave. It kind of feels weird talking about these things if I'm doing it myself, because I'm not. Folks are helping me out, so thank you.
I'm looking at your website right now. By the way, what a cool picture that is of you.
Oh, that's awesome.
At the top of the page with that big microphone right there. That is just so cool. That's dometi.net, D-O-M as in Mary, E-T-I.net. I have to make sure people know what letters I'm using.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, here's the set I was talking about. Doesn't that remind you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's the set for the MTV Twitter series that Dometi hosts, and he does some news. You do news hit twice a week, and then you do panel as well.
Yeah, news hits twice a day, and then a panel on a weekly, every Thursday. We've got a panel of, like, some comedians, some activists. We've had, I don't know if you guys know, DeRay, the activist who wears the Black Lives Matter. He's a Black Lives Matter activist, wears a blue vest all the damn time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that guy, his co-host, Brittany Packnett, came on the show, and we're working on figuring out a way to get him on. So a lot of comics locally in New York who I wasn't aware of until I did the show, but they are amazing. And so it's a pretty interesting show. It's pretty cool.
It's wonderful, and we wish you the very best. I know that you've got a lot going on. I want you to get some rest because it's actually 1:20 where you are right now.
It is. Yeah. It's 1:20 right now, but now y'all got me up. I done drank some coffee. Like, what's up? What else are you talking about, Doc? What's going on?
All right, hold on, Dometi. We'll keep you for another segment then. Since you're already up and you're on coffee, I'm not going to waste that. Dometi Pongo's on the line with us, and comedian Paul Farvar just walked in studio. So let's hang out a little longer with Dometi. Give us a call if you have any thoughts. The 412 says that they're your biggest fan, so they should call and say that right to your ear. More in a moment on 720 WGN. I want to encourage everyone to visit Dometi.net to find out all the great things that Dometi Pongo is up to. He's on the line with us right now, and something occurred to me off the air because Paul Farvar joined us. And you know Paul Dometi, right? You know him?
Paul, what's going on, man? How you doing?
What is up, Dometi? How are you?
I'm good, man.
Are you going to go say hi to downtown Judy Brown at MTV?
No. I can find her.
Yeah, no kidding.
I just wanted to age myself. Really
she's in 1988. You can find her there.
Or the cast of Real World.
Oh, my gosh.
Say hi to Jersey Shore guys for me.
The 847 Dometi says, I love Dometi. I was so afraid he was lost in New York City for good. Good to hear him on the air. So you're getting more love.
Oh, my God. Thank you, 847. Thank you.
By the way, speaking of love, I was curious about whether or not, because Paul is the, as you know, the host of the Singles Only podcast. Are you dating right now? Because you got a lot going on.
I am dating right now. I do have a lady.
Okay.
A lady friend, yes.
Paul just
can't
got
be
very,
on the podcast.
Yeah,
though.
Paul just got very sad because he lost a guest for the podcast.
Well, I'm very sad because I lost some of those textures I've been calling in. I've been.
You just blocked them.
Well,
messed it up.
Domateep, one of the things that Paul and I talk about with the guests on his podcast a lot is that when you're really busy or you're very career driven, it can be a little bit complicated to date. Are you with somebody who is equally, you know, driven in what they're doing right now?
Yes, she is, and no, it does not matter.
Oh, see?
Even though she is just as driven, it is still just as challenging.
Oh, really?
I'm not gonna lie. Yeah, it can be challenging. I mean, I think it takes maturity on both parts, you know, because I'm super busy, but the one minute that I'm free and she's not, it's like, dang, what's up? You know, and I think she goes through the same thing sometimes. It's very hard.
So you don't take it personally, do you?
No, I don't. I'm really actually just giving liberty. It's more so her tripping. Me, I'm chilling. I'm cool. I'm cool as a cucumber.
Yeah.
But I'm just trying to keep it even so I sound like diplomatic. I'm putting on my unbiased news anchor hat right now. But it's probably me who's the more like fluid. Like right now she's in Chicago and I'm in New York, for example. So she came out here for a week for the holidays, spent Christmas and New Year's with me, which was super fun. She set some anchors down here. She's got some shows. She's a performer, so she's got some shows out here coming up. So I think it's ways to incorporate your partner in what you do that we can create sometimes, you know, create art together, but also make it a good moment for the relationship. And that's kind of been my way to work through it.
So you're dating Lauryn Hill?
Pretty much.
That's so
pretty
cool.
That's my cast play that she knew it.
Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. Tell her is one of my favorite albums of all time. Tell her I said that.
I will.
Tell her now. That, is she right there with you?
Baby, you heard that? Yep. He loves it. Say, give us another one in 20 years.
Yeah, right.
So, Domateep, when do you come back to us? Since now you've got listeners worried that we might lose you to New York.
I'm coming on January 14th is when I am back.
Wow.
So I'm back on air January 14th, so a few more weeks.
Wow, you're out there for quite a bit. All right, fine. Now I'm having a little bit more trouble believing that you're coming back for good.
I'm coming back, I promise.
All right, we're going to hold you to it. Everyone visit domateep.net. That's dometi.net. You got to follow him on Twitter so you can keep up to date on all the MTV Twitter series episodes that he has. Every Thursday is the panel, right?
Every Thursday is the panel. My favorite.
There you go. That means tomorrow in just a little bit.
Yeah, just
in
moments. We're excited.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, be safe, Domateep, and we'll talk to you soon. If you want to check in again, let us know. We're here for you.
Thank you.
Thank you
so much. I appreciate you, Patty, Paul, Doc. Thank you, guys.
See you, Domateep.
Bye, Domateep.
Everything is everything.
Everything. More after this on 720 WGN. I think I'm going to oddly bring this in some ways full circle from a conversation that I had earlier in the show with Dr. John Duffy in studio with us. He has the podcast Better with his wife. Your wife's name?
Julie.
Julie. Julie and John Duffy. Do you go by Dr. and John, Julie Duffy? How does that work?
I think we say Julie Duffy and Dr. John Duffy. We couldn't figure it out. We still haven't sorted it out.
He makes her call, if you listen to the podcast, he makes her call him doctor on the show.
I do call her Mrs. Duffy.
Yeah.
Okay. So Mrs. Duffy and Dr. Duffy.
She calls him Dr. Duffy.
You can hear every week?
Every day.
Every day, if you listen to it over and over again, you can hear it, frequently, but every week, yes, is a new episode.
It's the podcast Better. What was this week's topic?
This week's topic was New Year's resolutions.
Oh.
And whether it's worth making them.
Oh.
And whether the new year, new you phrase actually makes sense or whether that's demeaning to the old you.
Interesting. Oh.
That's some deep stuff.
That's
deep
actually stuff. What I asked Dr. Duffy to come in and talk about today was forgiving ourselves if we don't either, one, make resolutions, or if we don't uphold our resolutions.
Right.
Because I think people, you know, they then become, once they let something go, then they overdo it. And like, well, screw it. I didn't accomplish anything, so yeah. I'm just going to throw in the towel altogether.
Yeah. I'm off the wagon. Yeah. It's like falling off the wagon. I give up. I'm not going to the gym again this year.
So David Jennings says he doesn't do any of the resolutions because none of them ever stick. Are you finding people getting more and more?
A lot of people are saying that.
Yeah. Did you decide?
I just better myself every day, every year.
Every day.
I think of stuff on the fly. I feel like I start thinking of stuff in December that I want to change, and then I'll just do it. And then if I stick it out, but I don't talk about it. Let's do it.
Right. I mean, some people do because they feel like that's a way to keep themselves honest.
Accountability.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it makes sense.
Right. That's a big part of it.
Yeah.
There's some research, if you guys want to hear about something really fun and interesting, that would suggest that decisions hold more heft than resolutions. The word resolution suggests, this isn't going to last. Whereas if you decide something's going to happen, you actually start planning it, and it's more likely to have some legs.
So decide. Don't resolve.
Do you think it's better to put it out there in writing somewhere that this is what you're going to do, or if you keep it to yourself, do you have a strong opinion one way or the other?
It's far more likely to happen if you make it public.
Hold
yourself accountable with at least one person. Yeah.
I feel like that's what happened when I decided to become a stand-up comic. I just decided, and I started telling people, and it's one of those things where like putting
that's
it out
true.
There.
That's true. Yeah. I think that's true. Actually, the fact that I started joking on stage about leaving the law, I ended up doing it. So.
Right. You put it out there to others.
So that makes
manifested
sense.
Manifested it.
Manifested it.
Sounds like that. What's that, the book, the Secret? Isn't
yes,
that,
yes. Which is an absurd.
By Ryan Seacrest?
I don't know who it's.
I'm pretty sure it's not Ryan Seacrest.
You're wrong, Doc.
Okay, well, we'll
Dr. John.
Agree to disagree.
There were so many people that really believed all that stuff. But so there are people who are doing, they're doing dry January, you know, and some there's some thought that maybe that's good because then you're more aware of when you do drink and when you need it, and maybe you slow down in other ways. Some people think that pulling back the curtain behind a problem of alcohol.
Right.
You know, so there's different ways to do that. But if it's something that I did Sober October, which was.
You did?
I did.
I remember that.
I saved some money and I lost some weight. And I did. I was aware of when I reach for one. I'm like, you know, when I come home from work or if I, you know, when I have a beer and things like that.
I think it's always a good idea to take a break from something like that. Right. Yeah. And then when you come
back.
Says
the sober guy.
Well, yeah. I've taken a very, very long break.
Ever since that incident on Rush Street.
Yes. Will you tell us, was it Mother's? Which one was it?
I think it was Mother's, actually. Yeah.
It just seems like it just doesn't seem like a young John Duffy would be at Mother's. Like right around when they.
I want to know what the hair looked like back then. To be honest,
it was not a good situation. I'm going to be honest with you.
Was it hair big and foofy?
It was. It was
mullety.
It kind of 80s mullety foofy. It was large.
It was
large.
I'm sensing a large. Yeah.
And there was a bad set of glasses to match it with it. Yeah. Oh, nothing was working.
Wow.
No.
Well, this is how I'm going to bring us.
I'd be sober too.
Well, here, let me ask Sarah first before we continue. Have you made any resolutions, or do you believe in making New Year's resolutions?
I used to heavily believe in it, and I thought it was a great idea. And then I started to hit like the last weeks of 2018, and I was just like, wow, like a lot of the major goals that I set for myself in 2018 I accomplished, and I don't really know what to do now for myself for 2019.
Right.
So I think my overall just idea going into this year is to just be better than myself, period, last year. And I think something that I just want to hold myself accountable to is to learn something that I haven't done.
Right.
That I've been just putting off. So I haven't made like any heavy resolutions like, oh, I want to do X, Y, and Z. But it's more so like, well, you know, I haven't learned to make beats yet. I want to try to do that. Or I didn't take any vacations last year. Let me see if I can do one. But it's not like, if I don't do it, I'm going to feel like the failure of the resolution that people fall into. So
That's smart.
That's how I'm looking at it.
It's very self-aware of that. Because I did. My resolutions last year were like, I'm going to write for a half an hour a day and read a half an hour. And I didn't. And I even set up like apps. It still reminds me. Did you read today? Did you work out today? I'm like,
hard.
No, shut up, phone. Yeah.
It's hard. I feel like it's so easy to like talk about it. Like, yeah, I have my resolutions together. And then as soon as the year kicks off, it's kind of slow because it's January. And everyone's kind of like broke. There's nothing really to do because it's the first month of the year. And then after that, everything picks up heavily per usual. And you kind of lose sight of the different things that you tried so hard to hold yourself to.
Yeah.
And then I feel like you start to punish yourself.
I agree.
Because you didn't hold yourself accountable the way that you thought you could.
That's true.
Definitely.
I'm looking at a whole year of all the alerts of not of sometimes doing those things.
One of the things I did do so far was only take the stairs. I have an elevator in my building.
I saw your video.
And I've been doing that since... Even hungover on
even
on
hungover.
Years, I took the stairs
that
four floors,
feat.
Yeah,
and that's great.
That's a little something.
Yeah,
those are the baby ones. The other stuff is harder, and we'll see. We'll see if I do it tonight.
Did you do it on the way up to the station?
I did. Yeah,
18 floors.
Oh no! Not these.
Well, I was gonna say, like, oh, you went up.
Are there stairs up here? I would do it.
I'm gonna ask security if I can use the stairs because I
there
saw your
stairs
video.
You can't get in.
You can't get in
even with a card.
No, like once you hit any floor, you cannot get access back
out.
There
you go.
You can get access into the doorway, but not back out.
Oh, so I can go down.
One of the producers got trapped in the doorway. That's why I know this.
Did you see him in there?
I did not see him. I heard the story because he missed something that he was supposed to catch. No, I don't think it was Domitie. Domitie always takes the elevator. I know that for a fact.
Yeah. I wanted to be able to take the stairs. Yes.
I want to know if they have the... that's what I'm going to do tomorrow is find out if my office has stairwells. That you are like, because I know they have the fire exit ones, but I don't know if they have ones in our building because that's 8 floors.
Yeah.
That would be good.
Yeah. Good there must be an internal stairwell.
I would think.
Yeah. That's a good idea.
Because if I do that, that's doubling what I'm doing already.
Look at that.
And then I don't need to do any of these other stupid resolutions.
Yeah, you're done resolving.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You've decided.
You've decided.
I've decided. I'm better and all that good stuff.
There you go. One of the things you and I talked about was getting on a calendar. I have a hard copy calendar now. I think I'm going to show it to you.
Desktop version?
I have a desktop. It's not like a big table one. It's just like a spiral notebook calendar.
Yeah, it opens out. Yeah,
that's good too. Well, what I bought was almost like when you go to the hairdresser and you see like the slots for each half hour because for the show... I need a different kind of a layout. I don't want to just have like big blocks so I can actually do half hour by half hour. And rather than it, because it starts at 7 a.m., I'm like, well, it just starts at 7 p.m. I write notes in the top and then I have it worked out really well. Because it's been really hard for me, like doing this show. We've been using spreadsheets, and to do a spreadsheet on my phone has been absolutely. I've never been able to get this
that's
down.
Hard.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, like it, the you know, I would like
it
try
messes to, up too if you move pages and stuff.
Well,
especially at Google.
And if you're trying to scroll over to like these columns, and then like if I expand it, I'm like, what day is that? And I can't. It just becomes. It was unmanageable.
Yeah.
I realized it was one of those things that was holding me back from maybe reaching out and doing other. You know, bookings. And so I sent out some emails today for some dream guests that I've been wanting for a while.
Nice.
So it frees nice. You start thinking awesome. And visualizing. So do you want me to tell you who I sent out emails to?
You already told me today.
I know, but I
want
you
to know again, Paul. You're supposed to act like you don't know yet, Paul.
Yeah, the audience doesn't know.
I don't know if you should tell people.
You're right, because then if I don't, but if I put it out there.
But if you keep it internalized too, I think it's more the spiritual aspect of it.
Make big moves in silence.
Okay, big moves in silence.
Yeah,
yes, you'll have to. I
read that somewhere.
Big moves in silence?
It's on my Twitter page.
No. That certain stuff that you visualize or whatever, and then it happens.
Yeah.
And
I do believe it. Secret by Ryan Seacrest.
Oh,
is that the
Seacrest book? That's probably where I read it.
The
big
secret.
Fan.
Well, but you know what? There's actually one story. I don't want to put this in the at the end of the show for Tell Me Something Good. There's a story I tweeted about today, and it just made me laugh because, you know, we were talking in the first segment about tragedy and when you're young and trying to, you know, understand tragedy. But sometimes, you know, because people don't like talking about death at all. Like, do you have your plans for, do you have an idea of what?
I don't like talking about it at
all.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
No. I'm getting better at it. That's on my resolution list, too.
Well, do you find, I mean, this is probably an anxiety issue for a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think probably more anxiety provoking than almost anything we can talk about.
When I was a kid, I struggled really, really hard with this.
Me too.
Yeah. I would have to get up. Like, I would start when I was in bed, I would have to get up and restart, like, the whole process of going to bed just to, like, not be in the same mood or mental path.
Well, I'm reading a memoir by Jeff Tweedy of Wilco, and he talks about how he had that problem. And it reminded me of when John Lennon got shot. I was really young.
Aww.
And it affected me to the extent where I was crying every day, like saying, I don't want to die. Like, my parents are like,
wow,
you're only 3 years old. Like, you know, it was just so.
Yeah.
But it did have a surreal. That stuff scared me. And then right after, like, Ronald Reagan got shot or something like that. And you're like, oh,
that was pretty close after.
Yeah, yeah.
I can imagine.
Well, and that's the thing, is that every single person's going to be different with how they're able to sort of find, you know, some comfort in whatever it is, right? For me, like, I think, because I struggled with religion when I was younger. I'd gone through, like, a part of my life where I absolutely believed everything. And then I dated a boy who I found out was an atheist. And I had never
Wait, how old was he?
He was 20. We were 20 years old.
You said boy. So I was like, a 12-year-old's like, yeah, I'm atheist. Like,
no.
That's pretty impressive.
No.
Some woke boy.
Tom was an atheist, and I'd never met one. Like, that's how weird, like, how isolated you are.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd come to terms with, you know, with religion and with death and found my place. And then I just, like, at 20, was like, what? And it really freaked me out. I still don't even, like, I tried to see a therapist but I had a therapist who was like, well, don't you, did you ever see these documentaries about angels and stuff? I'm like, okay, you're not. This is not.
You're not helping.
No.
That's not my world.
What? Well, yeah. It's sort of. That's a weird moment when a therapist brings in their own sort of ideology.
We are trained to try to walk that line very carefully to not do that.
And yeah. it was amazing because I started talking to different people and finding out, and then I found out there were people in my family who were atheists and agnostics who I never knew. Isn't that weird?
I didn't know that my father was atheist until I was 21 or 22.
Wow.
Isn't that strange?
But it all makes sense later in life, because I remember my mom was Baha'i, and they believe in a lot of the prophets and everything, so they let us pick religion. And then I'd go to stuff, and I remember a couple of times I'd come home, and my dad would be like, what'd you learn today? I'm like, oh, we learned about Jesus. And he'd be like, sounds like a lot of tales, huh? Like he was like,
wow.
As a kid, I'm like, sounds like fairyland, huh? Yeah. Like, he was yeah, already... making me...
He was being a little cynical about it?
Yeah.
Oh, my dad...
wasn't allowed to do that, I guess, maybe.
Well, my dad was a Catholic, and I think that he was a lapsed Catholic, but still believed his whole life. My mother, when they got married, she was a Mormon, so she had the missionaries coming over to our house, and my dad loved when they came over, because he would answer the door in a sleeveless t-shirt and boxers and a bottle of tequila and a bottle of whiskey, and he'd be like, what'll it be, boys? Because of course the Mormons don't.
Yeah,
yeah, he just thought it was the funniest thing. And then I ended up switching to Lutheranism, because the Mormons, they try to drown you. But it's a much longer story than that. But I was okay with religion for a while, and then when I started finding out all these different sort of perspectives, it actually kind of helped me. It was sort of soothing that we're all trying to find answers in different ways, and you have to find that peace. I know it's scary, but the reason that it came
so
up today,
scary.
It is. Yeah. Well, and I, like, when my father passed away, I worried most of my life about my dad dying, and then when he did, it was like, I kind of, part of me wished that I had spent more time, you know, being with him and enjoying things rather than worrying so much about what was actually going to happen,
right,
regardless of how much worry you have.
Yeah, we tend to worry our lives away about stuff like that instead of, like, being in a moment and just enjoying that moment for sure.
That's really hard. So I was fascinated when I saw this headline. I know we only have a couple minutes before we go to a break, but the state of Washington, I'm sorry, but because everyone tries to figure out, like, what the plans are going to be. Because my parents would talk about, like, you know, I want to be cremated, and mm-hmm. my dad asked me where to put him, and I haven't gotten around to that because my mom won't let me throw him in the harbor. But that's where he wanted to be, at Fullerton. Anyway, Washington State could be the first state to legalize human composting. And here's part of the headline. Washington residents are very excited about the prospect of becoming a tree. Who gets excited about becoming a tree? This is a new level of comfort with what happens next.
Something like from Portlandia.
Yeah, I want... That is rather...
Definitely, right.
It is very Washingtonian of
them,
isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's very, like, sandals and... the Birkenstock crowd.
And I get it, though, because, you know, our cemeteries are full. We have, there are a lot of people who want to find different traditions and things like that. I kind of tend to find cemeteries beautiful just because there's this, Paul is so grossed
out. I do
out.
Not like going.
You don't have to unless it's, you know, in situations. But I used to go for walks. I mean, that's in cemeteries. Yeah. And just sort of contemplate, like, all these people who were loved and these monuments that were left behind for them. And just kind of, there's something soothing about that. Paul is not getting me at
all. No, I wish I've had bad experiences there, obviously.
Yes.
It brings back bad memories.
I can see that. But I guess the idea of having a tree, I don't know if that, does that sound appealing to anybody? Or I mean, obviously there's a process by which you can't just, like, you're not going to compost with the vegetables.
I will say that the idea of becoming a tree holds a little appeal to me. I haven't given it a lot of thought, but I'm thinking of the whole ashes to ashes thing, right? That we're to the idea of being born again into a new type of living organism.
Life?
Yeah, bringing more life to the planet. I don't mind that as much as like the mausoleum idea or something.
Oh, isn't that
and that one's rough.
Paul, isn't this okay? Like right about the time where people go to sleep and now they're gonna have to think about this stuff? Patty, are you gonna get some angry texts?
I don't know that I've dredged this up. Here's the thing. You take deep breaths and you know that we're all feeling the same sort of fears and anxieties, and you know we're all
surrendering
the
now.
Worry you don't worry your life away,
right?
You know, that's kind of why I've always sort of tried to find a way to laugh about it, including like when my father passed away. Someone said, you know, because my dad was a cab driver for 50 years. And that's the way I always imagine him. Like when I think about him, is wearing black slacks and a white collared shirt because he was very professional about it. And someone told me, you know, your father will always be with you. He's your spiritual guide. And I started laughing because all I could think was, great, now I have a dead cab driver giving me directions. Thanks for that.
Tell me something good. Tell me that.
Tell me something good. What's making you happy, no matter how your day goes or what's happening in your life? You can always find something to be grateful for. I am grateful to have spent some wonderful time with good friends tonight. Paul Farvar and Dr. John Duffy in studio with me, and our friend Domati Pongo on the line. And we hung out with our friends from Funnier by the Lake. And
I didn't. I wasn't here for that.
I did, though. I'm not asking. You're
you
part
said we.
Of...
Are she meant the rest of us.
How it's going to be. This is how it's going to be.
The collective we. How's that? The royal we. Is that what we're looking for?
This is what happens when we talk about death. You get me all riled up.
No kidding.
You're still here, Paul. It's all fine. And it was a lovely night. And it's been a great holiday hanging out with Griffin and Declan. By the way, I don't know if I've told you, this is the thing I'm actually grateful for in my life, because I'm going to go home and go to sleep in this. I bought a massive beanbag for our house. Have I told you about this yet?
I love beanbags.
Oh my, but it's made out of memory foam. This thing, it's a 6-foot beanbag, and it weighs about, it's massive. I'll take
like
a picture.
My pillow.
It's like a My Pillow.
My Pillow beanbag. That's what they should do.
They should. This thing is amazing.
Yeah.
I have fallen asleep in it twice now. I mean, and once I just went to like sit down and look at my phone or something, and I woke up 4 hours later like, I didn't know where I was. I was so surprised. But
it's a primo beanbag.
It's a lovely hug. I'll show you guys a picture before we go, but that's my something good is that my house has been very cozy during the holidays with my family and my massive beanbag. You could have room in your rock room.
Yeah,
do you have room in there?
My rock room. I like that you call it that.
Your rock room? That's what you called it last night was your rock room. What are you happy for, Paul?
I forgot. I was here yesterday, and then I forgot to mention how much fun I had on New Year's Eve with comedian Brian Regan, hanging out with him again.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
And he was such an amazing person and so fun and so funny. Like, my face hurt the next day. So I was definitely hungover because I usually don't drink, as some of you guys know, and it was worth it. It was worth it because I had so much fun.
And you didn't get his information, not necessarily just for my show, but for you to keep in touch with him.
I know.
I don't understand.
Well, I have friends who know him. I could just, I don't know. I didn't think about
you
that.
You dropped the ball.
Yeah, it's the second time. I understood the first time. Don't you think that set a precedent? If it's the second time and you have as much fun and you connect like that.
For sure, two times.
I didn't want to ruin it. I didn't want to overstep. It was in my head that I was overstepping, so I was like,
no.
I didn't feel like
it. To be like, hey, can I follow you on Instagram? Or?
And I just found out that the guy I'm opening for on Saturday is his opener as well. So like, I've opened for all his openers now.
That's so funny.
But I didn't even know. That's fine. Whatever.
Tell me something good, Doc.
All right. So two things. First of all, I really appreciate spending tonight with you, Patty.
Thank you for
so fun. Seriously.
Thank you.
And I, Paul and I have talked about this, but I am married to Julie. My son is George. We have so much fun together all the time. And I don't think I say I'm grateful for the two of these people enough, but they're awesome. I can never wait to get home to them every single day.
And now later than you probably were supposed to be.
It's all good.
That's lovely.
They know where I am.
That's right. Because Sarah, tell me something good.
I think I am very grateful for my New Year's Eve, only because I think it's great when I am able to work to bring in a holiday, but also share like the fruits of my labor with those that matter most. So three of my closest friends got to come with me as I DJ at Soho House. Yeah.
Nice.
That's fantastic. And nice. And what a great place to DJ too.
Yeah, it was something. It was an alien casino that I DJ'd, but it was really cool.
That's outstanding.
Wow.
Yay. I know Vic Vaughn's behind the news desk. I don't know if he wants to jump on, and I don't want to put you on the spot. You know what was great is that I got to hang out. I'll tell you an extra something good that's about you, Vic Vaughn, was that we get to see Welcome to Marwen together at Nick D's last movie club. And we were lucky because it was on a Saturday, so we all got to hang out on a Saturday and see Robert Zemeckis' latest movie, which I wish more people would go see. It seems like people aren't enjoying it as much as we did. Vic, it was great to see
you. Reviews, right? Yeah, it was a lot of fun, Patty.
It was a blast. And I was sorry you couldn't stay afterwards, but didn't you like that movie?
I know. We rented a car, and I realized, because my favorite part is listening to Nick talk afterwards.
Yes.
I was looking forward to hearing you two talk about your interview, and I realized we rented a Maven car, which means you have to, it's a hard out. You got to have it back.
So, really?
Yes. So we had to leave.
So Maven's, and I've seen some of those spots. I didn't realize that those are rental spots.
We have one in the parking garage of my building that I live in. So it's convenient. And, you know, you just like,
I don't know anything about those.
It's great. Look it up. It's so good. It's
all
an
right.
app. It's, I think I was driving a Cadillac, and it was, I think, $9 an hour. It's gas is paid, insurance.
Cadillac?
It was great.
That's fun. Really, that's good. Fancy.
Maven.
That's a good way to go. All right, that's good to keep in mind. By the way, Nick D's next movie club is Slapshot. Sorry, I didn't mean to get so
excited. Such a good movie.
You have to say it
that
way.
That's a fun one.
I have to see if the Blackhawks are playing that night so I can stay out a little bit, because if they're not, I have to be here by 10, so I'll have to see. So that's his next movie club. I think it's just next week. It's exciting. All right, thank you everybody so much for hanging out with us.